Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from August 1st, 2001.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be across this great land of ours and well beyond. I'm Art Bell, back with my back, sort of. And I'll tell you all about that as time goes on. We've got a lot of business to take care of, so let's get it on. KMZC-FM. In Winfield, Texas, 94.3 on the FM dial. Welcome, that's KMZC in Winfield, Texas. Good to have you aboard. KOPB in Perry, Oklahoma, 1220. Make that 1020 on the dial. 1020 in Perry, Oklahoma. And KRLN in Cannon City, Colorado, 1400 on the dial. Welcome to the program as well. That's three more as we head so rapidly now. We're that far away from 500 affiliates, a mark I've been wanting to achieve for a long, long time. All right, tonight we have business. The campaign for disclosure man, Dr. Stephen Greer, is here and will be with us shortly. And he'll update us on what's been going on, and that's a lot. He had the press conference, you recall, at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., We'll follow that in the next hour by a couple of hours of Sylvia Brown, and then we'll do some open lines and I'll tell you everything that's going on. In the meantime, here I sit with an ice pack on my back, and we'll see how it goes tonight. Hopefully okay, it's been quite an odyssey. At any rate, coming up in a moment, Dr. Stephen Greer.
Now we take you back to the night of August 1st, 2001, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Well, all right, it's been a while in more ways than one, huh, folks? Here comes the master, the leader of the Disclosure Project. He is Dr. Stephen Greer. Dr. Greer, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here and glad to see you're back.
Thank you. Boy, a lot has gone on with you. I know you've been all over the country. I think you're going to, you're going to San Diego, then you're going to Los Angeles?
Yeah, actually on this Saturday, August 4th, we're going to be in Los Angeles showing the witness testimony to anyone who wants to come at the Founders Church of Religious Science on West 6th Street, and then on Sunday, the 5th of August, we're going to be at the Scottish Rite Center in San Diego on Camino del Rio South, and both of these are open to the public. We're going to show 2 hours of the 120 hours that we have of top secret witness testimony, and we're going to be organizing people to really take action, and everywhere we've been going, we've been in Boulder, we had to turn away 500 people at that event at the University of Colorado, and we're getting just such huge support from all over the world for getting the truth out, and I can tell you that it's been having a massive effect inside the Congress.
All right, then tell me, what has happened? Because that's the arena where something will finally really occur, if it's going to, right?
Well, it's one of the arenas, and interestingly, we've been getting some very positive support from the United Nations. The Committee on Disarmament has been meeting with us. We have been meeting with the Russian and Chinese and European embassies, as well as Mexican embassies in Washington.
Really? How do they, may I ask, how do these countries' ambassadors and so forth react to your information?
Oh, they're taking it very seriously, because when they read through, you know, people can get on our disclosureproject.org website. It's just disclosureproject.org. And there's a 600-page book of transcripts. And we send that in advance, of course, and their staff goes through it. And they're astonished, because they're looking at this 600 pages of transcripts of people ranging from colonels to brigadier generals to senior FAA officials, and they realize, my God, this really is real. It's not just, you know, sort of X-Files fantasy rubbish. And so what their take on this is that they're hungry for the information. I think we're reaching a breakout sort of event where even members of Congress that we've walked into other offices, and they said, oh yes, we've been following this. Please tell us. And I had an hour-long meeting with a member of Congress from Virginia, and this is big news. He wrote us a letter back saying, I want affidavits from these witnesses who have dealt with the technology and propulsion systems, because I want to pursue this with the Pentagon. This is a sitting member of Congress, and this is in black and white by letter. Virgil Good of Virginia is the congressman's name.
Well, what is it likely to lead to? Let's say you supply him everything he wants. What is he suggesting he might do?
He is stating that he will then pursue it formally with the Pentagon to investigate it further, and that other members of Congress that we have met with have stated that they will then, upon delivery of affidavits, will seriously consider holding these hearings. Now, that's, of course, a legal process, and we're trying to organize this. Dr. Alfred Weber up in Vancouver and Daniel Sheehan and others are helping us organize this approach. And, of course, it's a complex and large effort to get something like that done. But the fact that a member of Congress, and I met with this man personally for over an hour, and he said, look, you know, I take this very seriously. I'm extremely interested. So, you know, look, nobody is laughing at this. And members of the Senate and House are both taking this very seriously. And one thing I want to point out is the chairman of the Science and Technology Subcommittee in the House of Representatives, Dana Rohrabacher of Orange County, California, a couple weeks ago, talked about, and that committee meeting, which is a very relevant committee, and asked about UFOs and extraterrestrial intelligence. And so I think at one point some of the other congressmen started sort of brushing it aside. He says, no, wait a minute. You know, I had a constituent who was a policeman who pursued one of these in Orange County. And, you know, so this is really beginning to get on the radar. And I have to say to the listeners out there, you can get on our website, disclosureproject.org, and we have a free automated faxing system where you can fax your two senators and your congressman. And there have been hundreds and hundreds, in fact, thousands of these faxes and letters going into these offices. So believe me, that really does begin to have an effect, and that's our intended plan.
It does have an effect. You're right. When people actually sit down and write, particularly an individual letter, it really does get attention.
And they can do this now, no cost to them, on our website. We have someone who's underwriting the cost of that, which is substantial. And it's become very effective because it faxes a very nice-looking letter right into the congressman's office.
Do you think this might result in congressional hearings? I mean, that's the ultimate place, I suppose, you really want to go.
I think it will. At the minimum, it's resulting in the subject being looked at very seriously, being talked about amongst the senators and congressmen, being brought up in committees. And what's interesting is that we have a Congressman Kucinich of Ohio who announced last week in a major press release from his office that in September he will be introducing legislation banning the placement of weapons in space. And so, you know, this is the kind of thing we've been asking for, and we're getting some very serious action on a lot of these fronts.
Well, you know me, Doctor. I'm constantly suspicious, and if we get a treaty that says no weapons in space, it's my view that we'll have to bring back the ones we've got.
You got it. And by the way, the language, if you look at the language of what he's presenting, it mentions de-weaponizing space as well as keeping them out of there.
There you
and
go.
And Art, you're 100% correct. I have multiple, not just one or two, multiple corroborating top secret witnesses from the Air Force, from the Navy, from agencies that have confirmed to me that, in fact, we do have weapons in space, that
I
they
knew
have
it.
Been used.
I knew it.
And that this is an extremely dangerous thing. The reason, we just did an event here in Charlottesville, Virginia tonight, where we had about 1% of the population of this area show up, and we had a military guy there who worked for years with the Defense Intelligence Agency, John Maynard, and he's one of our witnesses that people can read about in this transcript of book or in the tape, and I think he's also excerpted on our website at disclosureproject.org, and he stood up in front of everyone and says, look, I was part of this secret government operation. I saw these satellite systems. I dealt with weapon systems and satellites that were pointed not towards the Earth but out into space. And I was involved in events that, quite frankly, he said he wasn't proud of. But
now let's think about this. Why would you want to point a space-based weapon out into space?
Well, they were, of course, tracking and targeting extraterrestrial vehicles. And one of the things that has become quite clear, if you look at the testimony of Colonel Arneson and also Bob Salas. By the way, in Los Angeles on Saturday, August 4th, Dr. Carol Rosen and Bob Salas was at the Maelstrom ICBM, Intercontinental Ballistic Missile Facility. He will be there with us at the Founders Church of Religious Science on 6th Street, West 6th Street in Los Angeles. And he is going to describe the event that took place there, where there were 16 to 18 intercontinental ballistic missiles taken offline and rendered unlaunchable. Now, he says that he didn't think this was an act of hostility, but he was trying to tell us, please don't blow up this beautiful planet. So what we're seeing is increasing numbers of military people from diverse services corroborating the apparent interest and concern these extraterrestrials have in our weapons of mass destruction, and in particular, the placing of weapons in space. You know, we have a colonel, a full bird colonel, who later was with the Atomic Energy Commission and who was given his assignment by Nathan Twining, the famous General Twining.
Sure.
And he is name, rank, serial number in our testimony, and he states that we tried to put a thermonuclear device on the moon to explode it in the 60s, and that it was intercepted by an extraterrestrial vehicle as it left our airspace and went into space.
Oh, no kidding.
And was totally taken out because they did not want us going out into space with these very destructive weapon systems.
Well, then we're being monitored very closely.
Absolutely. And every single military guy, that if you read this testimony carefully, you will find that this is a phenomenon occurring all over the world. And one of the things I said to the colonel who was in charge of the Wright-Patterson facility that the Roswell remains were sent to is that when he asked me, do you think these could be a threat to the national security? I said, well, obviously, if they have interstellar travel capability, they could terminate all of life on Earth in a nanosecond. They haven't done it, notwithstanding the stupid things we've done. To me, that's enough evidence to show that they're not nakedly hostile. The issue, though, is are we doing things that they're extremely concerned about, maybe even unhappy about, as we ruin our biosphere, as we put weapons in space, as we do things to target them? And unfortunately, we have testimony from people in very senior positions, for example, at the Atlantic Command Facility in Norfolk, a man who had a top-secret SCI clearance with zebra stripes, so he could be there during a thermonuclear war, where because the commander there didn't know what he was dealing with, he was ordering a massive extraterrestrial vehicle that came into our airspace back in 1981 to be forced down. And this thing was so powerful that it went from off the coast of Newfoundland to off the coast in Jacksonville, Florida, in basically the span of one radar sweep. It disappeared off of one radar and was on another one way down off of Jacksonville.
Exactly what sort of vehicle was he ordering to take such a vehicle down?
Well, but see, the poor man, I mean, this was an admiral, I'll give you the name of him, a four-star admiral. He was the commander-in-chief Atlantic Command, SYNC Atlantic Command.
Uh-huh.
And this man, Admiral Harry Train, honestly, hadn't been adequately briefed. The secrecy around this subject is so severe that our senior flag officers, meaning our generals and admirals, often don't know what they're dealing with when they encounter this phenomenon, and in that ignorance can take very dangerous steps.
Well, I can understand, though, a field-level commander obviously responds to a threat. I mean, if something is flying in our airspace, you say, identify it or shoot it down.
Right, and of course they had already, by the way, gotten on the hotline and confirmed it wasn't Soviet. And, of course, this was in the height of the Cold War, and of course, they knew at that point it was extraterrestrial, but they didn't really know what to do, and the guy was really in a state of panic over this. And the man that we have this testimony from, Merle Shane McDowell, top secret, SCI clearance, name, rank, serial number, we've got all his military forms, no one can shake this story. He said that it was a very frightening situation, not because we were being threatened by this object, but because how we were responding to it. We were scrambling jets up and down the eastern coast of America with orders to force this thing down at all costs. Now, this is a very dangerous thing, and that, when I've gone to the Pentagon, one of the points I've made to people there, and very senior people at the Defense Intelligence Agency and elsewhere on the Joint Staff, is that this is a threat to our national security. This secrecy has gone too far. And it's become a threat because not only are we not having the good benefits of these advanced technologies, but we leave our commanders and our admirals and generals who haven't been briefed on this in an information vacuum in which serious errors can be made. So this is something that every citizen concerned about the security of the United States and of the world should be concerned about.
You've got to wonder, Doctor, what would happen if we did shoot one down?
Well, actually, we have. And we have people who can confirm. One of our witnesses was a Marine security officer who guarded a site in Peru near the Bolivian border where an extraterrestrial vehicle in 1997, read the testimony. It's there for anyone to read. It's name, rank, and serial number, Lance Corporal John Wigan. And he said that this thing obviously had been hit by one of our systems and that it crashed into a hillside in the jungle of Peru.
You know, I vaguely remember something down there. Was that reported in the press in any way?
Some of it did leak out. The details no one ever knew until this man came forward. And believe me, this guy was sweating. He's a young man. He's only 24 years old. He was 21 when this happened 4 years ago. Maybe he's 25 now. But the thing is here is that, you know, one of the things I said to officers at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, given the unbelievably stupid things we have done and continue to do, if these very powerful, interstellar-capable spacecraft were really hostile to us, you and I wouldn't be having this conversation. We would not be breathing the free air of Earth.
I would imagine.
And so the point, however, is that when no one's minding, who's minding the store here? I mean, you know, you have members of Congress not being told. You have presidents being lied to. We can prove this. And through testimony, direct testimony, you have to question, are we all at risk by some organization taking actions that are a threat to the national security? I think the answer to that is yes.
I do, too.
And even if you don't factor in the very serious issue of these advanced energy and propulsion systems being withheld from the world and the rolling blackouts in California and the possibility of global warming and the pollution that we have, you have this other larger looming question of who is taking care of this embryonic relationship between humanity and these other civilizations. I would present to you it's time that we people on the earth awaken to this information and begin to be those people taking care of that relationship. It should not be managed exclusively through an unappointed, unelected group of people who are acting purely within a military paradigm.
Do you think you know some of the who's with regard to who is managing this relationship? Do you think you know some of the identifications?
Yes, I do, because I've met with some of them, and there's no question in my mind that we know who some of them are. And I'll say this, that they're not a homogenous group. There's certainly 35 to 45% of them who support and favor what we're trying to do. They're a minority, obviously, but and the other two-thirds would like to see us go away. But I think that there's a growing number of people within this operation who support this. And I have to say, this is why I'm encouraging anyone listening who is a military, government, intelligence, or corporate witness to UFO events and projects to please contact me personally through our website, disclosureproject.org. It'll be handled very confidentially, and it's very important that more and more of these people come forward. By the way, we're now up over 450 people. Since May 9th when we did this at the National Press Club, there are another over 30 witnesses. The last one I dealt with yesterday, who's a 93-year-old man who was present with Colonel Corso and knew and can corroborate much of Colonel Corso's testimony in his book, The Day After Roswell.
As you know, I interviewed Colonel Corso several times, very fortunate to have interviewed him. You take his testimony as rock solid?
Well, I think that it is overall very, very solid. And in fact, what I have found, and one of the things that this Defense Intelligence Agency man that we had here today with us in Charlottesville, Virginia, he said that he had dealt also with Corso when Corso was in his capacity way back in the early 60s. And we have other people who have corroborated different components. Brigadier General Lubkin, who's a practicing attorney in North Carolina, talks about this filing cabinet and this case that had some of the extraterrestrial materials from Roswell, and he personally saw it. And this is a man who's a practicing attorney and currently is a brigadier general in the Army National Guard.
All right, Doctor, hold it right there. We're at the bottom of the hour, and we'll be right back. Dr. Stephen Greer, who's the man out front with Disclosure Nationwide, is my guest. Well, it makes you wonder about the nature. What do you think the nature of our relationship with them is? Kind of curious about that myself. And who presides over it? Well, I'd sure love to have a few of those names, wouldn't you? And I've got a few more questions about those ICBMs.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 1st, 2001.
About you and about you, there's no street, I was talking to a man. He said, "The soul, my brother's not the mind that I don't understand. You shouldn't worry," I said, "that ain't no crime. Cause if you get it wrong, you'll get it right next time." You need direction, yeah, you need a name. When you stand at the crossroads, you'll be high with the same. After a while, you can recognize the signs. So if you get wrong, you get right.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from August 1st, 2001.
Dr. Stephen Greer, CSETI's Stephen Greer's here. Campaign for Disclosure, let me see here. In Los Angeles, Saturday, August 4th, from 1 to 6 p.m. at the Founders Church of Religious Science, 3281 6th Street. It's $5 donation to get in, that's it. $5 requested to cover facility expenses, and then on down to San Diego. Sunday, August 5th, at, well, same deal, 1 to 6. 1 to 6, 5 hours. And $5 once again. It'll be at Scottish Rite Center, 1895 Camino del Rio South, San Diego. $5 for an awful lot of information, folks. Dr. Stephen Greer.
Now we take you back to the night of August 1st, 2001, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Once again, Dr. Stephen Greer. Dr. Greer, a lot of Americans heard about these ICBMs that were supposedly disabled. Can you give us a brief rendition of that incident? Where was it, and how many of them were there?
Well, this was at Malmstrom Air Force Base back in, I believe, 67 or 68. By the way, Bob Salas, who was there in the launch control facility, will be at this Los Angeles disclosure event on August 4th, this Saturday, at the Founders Church of Religious Science, and he will describe this in detail. Basically, what happened is that in the early morning hours, UFOs were seen over the launch control facilities at a couple of different flight lines, both his and another one.
Right.
And shortly thereafter, one by one, each of these intercontinental ballistic missile silos were rendered unlaunchable, which they believe was by some kind of electromagnetic failure. And it's temporarily associated with these UFOs that were right over these facilities. And he has government documents to show that this happened, and at least half a dozen to a dozen additional witnesses besides himself. And in fact, Colonel Dwayne Arneson, who's another one of our witnesses, was in a command center. He was had a crypto clearance in charge of the sort of launch codes. And he saw the message come across the teletype describing from the Strategic Air Command headquarters that, in fact, these nuclear silos had been rendered unlaunchable and that the UFOs were over the area. Now, what's interesting is that we've learned that a similar event had happened in the Soviet Union.
That's right.
It was obvious that I think it was Sam Donaldson or one of the ABC News reporters a few years ago reported the same sort of thing happening over in the Soviet Union.
With one little difference.
Pardon?
With one little difference.
What's that?
They were put into launch mode.
Into launch mode. Well,
that's right.
There are other. I'm thinking of an account separate from that one where they were also rendered unlaunchable.
Unlaunchable.
Totally unlaunchable. I mean, in fact, I think they were offline pretty much all day long.
With
another ones at Malmstrom Air Force Base were
taken offline. With regard to our ICBMs, was there anything common to the equipment that otherwise could have accounted for that failure? I wouldn't think so. I would think they'd be extremely independent, wouldn't they?
That's right, and in fact, they are all independent, and one failing should never affect another one because they have redundancy of systems. And in fact, the Boeing officials who had manufactured these missiles were in the process of investigating it to find out what happened, and the Air Force stopped the investigation. We have a letter from this technician and scientist with Boeing stating that the Air Force interrupted the investigation because they didn't want this looked into any further.
I interviewed the people from Boeing. I know that's true. I know for a fact that's true. Now, you consider or you believe that to be a demonstration?
I'm certain, because I've interviewed people, not just from that event, from multiple others as well, that it was a demonstration by these extraterrestrial civilizations that they did not want us going further down the road of these weapons of mass destruction. And I think they were also showing us that, you know, look, you know, we're not going to let you go into space with these things, and as easy as a pie, we can render all of these things totally inert. And I think that that's an important message for our leaders to get. And I think that it was missed because it was covered up. And I think that we need to think deeply about what the meaning of these sorts of events are.
Doctor, we've entered into various arms agreements with what used to be the Soviet Union.
Right.
How really disarmed are we? How really disarmed are they? Are we going in the right direction, or do you think somebody observing us would conclude it's all false and we're continuing right down the same road?
Well, I think they're concerned that it's not only continuing down the same road, but I think they see a trend towards expanding this desire to take weapon systems from the Earth and place them increasingly into space. Under whatever excuse they make. Now, we know that they're not really that concerned about these rogue states lobbing intercontinental ballistic missiles at us. I mean, let's face it, one of the scientists we interviewed at McDonnell Douglas, Dr. Paul Sitz, said that, look, since the 1950s, we've had the ability to make thermonuclear devices that would fit in a briefcase, and that this kind of threat is the threat you're going to face from rogue nations. And so the excuses that are being used to spend hundreds of billions of dollars, we know from other testimony, is really going into covert black projects related to these more dangerous systems. And I think there is deep concern from what I've seen and what I've heard from these extraterrestrial civilizations about that. You know, Dr. Carol Rosen, oh, who I should mention also, she'll be with me in Los Angeles and in San Diego. She was Wernher von Braun's spokesperson for the last 4 years of his life. Hmm. And on his deathbed, he said, look, we are going to put weapons in space. We are putting weapons in space. This is in the 70s. And he said that they will hoax a threat from outer space in order to convince people we need these things. And he begged Carol Rosen to do everything she could to stop the madness. And this was, of course, Wernher von Braun was the father of rocketry, and he was brought in under the paperclip operation.
Oh, sure.
And but, you know, here he was dying of cancer. He urgently wanted someone to take this seriously. And this is why Carol Rosen dropped everything she was doing as a corporate manager for Fairchild Industries, making big bucks.
Von Braun,
he said
that we would, if necessary, hoax a threat from outer space to continue the weapons in space program?
Correct. And that we fully had the capability of doing this. Now, she did not know that I had already interviewed another witness that we had present in the 1997 briefings we did for Congress, who had sat in on meetings where it had been discussed that we would use these so-called alien reproduction vehicles that are manufactured by Lockheed and Northrop and others that use anti-gravity propulsion that are made by humans to stage certain events to make it look like there was an alien threat when there wasn't one. And this man didn't know what Wernher von Braun had told Carol Rosen. That's the kind of corroboration we have on this kind of scheme that has been concocted. And, of course, whether it's the UFO community or the general public, I think many people are being deceived, and it's a very dangerous game.
Do you think that we are close to the time when such a deception would have to be perpetrated to continue the program?
I believe we're getting very close to that time. And in fact, I will tell you something. It's one of the most stunning things that has happened to me in 10 years of dealing with this issue. It certainly eclipses the 3 hours I spent with a President Clinton CIA director. And that is the day of the May 9th press conference at the National Press Club, which people can still see at our website, disclosureproject.org. We walked 2 hours later into a member of Congress's office who's on the House National Security Committee. And when we were there, nine of these military witnesses and I, he said, the fact that you are here says to me that time is short. He knew about this issue. He knew that things were getting more and more out of control. And I think that, you know, he's one of several members of Congress we've met with extensively who really are taking this very seriously. I'm not so sure that they know what to do yet. I think the other thing that they're waiting for is that they're waiting to hear from you, the listeners of this show, get on the website, send your congressman the faxes with all set up at disclosureproject.org. It won't cost you a dime. And you can send your member of Congress a letter expressing your desire to have open, secrecy-free hearings on this. But these members of Congress, and particularly this one in particular, said that he was very concerned about these issues.
Dana Rohrabacher?
No, it was a different one, and he asked us not to
say
his name yet.
But, all right.
But there were 9 witnesses to this, including Attorney Daniel Sheehan, who's our general counsel.
What gives you even a little bit of hope, Doctor, that if this cabal, and it's got to be a pretty secret, pretty tight one,
right,
is really running things, that Congress or anybody else, I mean, after all, if presidents haven't been brought into the loop, some of them at least, then it's hard to imagine that Congress is going to find their way into the loop.
I don't think they will, and here's the beauty of the situation. In fact, I was meeting with another member of Congress. I spent over an hour with this particular member of Congress, who stated to me, this was one of the most astounding things that's happened in the last month. This member of Congress turned to me and says, you know, there's a secret group that runs not only our country but the whole world, and we're really window dressing.
Hmm.
This is a member of Congress saying this to me. I'm not making this up. Hook me up to a lie detector.
Oh, now, no, I don't need to. I'm sure you're talking.
No, I mean, it's astonishing. And I said, yes, sir, that's correct. But if you'll hold a hearing, I have 450 deep throats that will come with evidence, with documents, with testimony firsthand, and you don't need to be put in the loop because I will put you in the loop. Now, one of my problems, personally, is that I'm sitting around carrying around what 450 of these guys know, and we would love to be able to have this live, televised, open hearing in Congress, but they're going to have to hear from not a few hundred, but tens of thousands of their constituents.
It's really hard to get somebody to write a letter, you know that?
It is, but see, now that we have this set up on the Internet with this automated fax system, they don't even have to write it. The letter's already written. They can change it a little bit, put their address in, hit a button, bam, no expense to them. It's sent right to the office.
Uh-huh.
There's no excuse now. See, we have people who put up the money so we can do this, so there's no excuse for someone not to. Anyone who has access to an Internet, which is everybody in America who wants to go to a public library, can get on the Internet, can send a fax to both of their members of the Senate and their congressman and to the president.
Well, aside from being on my program, which is pretty good exposure to a certain group of people at least, a pretty good group of people, you've got to build a gigantic grassroots kind of movement.
Yes.
Do you think that the Campaign for Disclosure Roadshow is going to get that done?
It's happening, in fact. And the networks that are being built are astonishing. And these are not people who are just in the UFO field today. I was just on the phone to a longstanding member of the Diplomatic Corps of Canada, an ambassador from Canada. He's been an ambassador to 9 countries. And he says, I've learned what you were doing. A friend of mine was at this event in Boulder. He got in. We had to turn away 500 people. But he said, my God, he says, I support everything you're doing. I will set up meetings with this person, this person. This is really happening. So, yes, I think that it's a matter of networking and getting people involved and understanding that the time for studying the phenomenon can continue, but we've got to move to another phase as well, and that's this activist phase of demanding that action be taken because time is getting short, not only for the environment, but for the cause of not only world peace, but universal peace. And I think that this is being realized by a growing number of people, and it's being taken very seriously. We're actually very heartened by it.
Well, here's something disheartening to me. If there are others, and if they are watching us, and I think that you've conclusively proven that, then they should be concluding about now that it's not going the way they want. We are putting weapons into space. The threat continues from Russia and China, and as you pointed out, other rogue nations, and we've got our own supply. Things are not exactly going the right way. So you've got to wonder, if they're ready to push some sort of button, their finger must be getting, or their claw, whatever, must be getting near the trigger.
Well, I think that this is the issue. You know, there's a wonderful Chinese saying I like to quote, unless we change directions, we're likely to end up where we are going. And no one ever looks at where we're going. And you know, here it is. If you look at the trend lines, we are headed in a direction. But the thing that, you know, I'm an eternal optimist. I really believe, ultimately, I have a lot of faith in the human spirit, and I think that if people are properly educated and the light of truth is shown on us, that collectively we can and we will do the right thing. I mean, I see that no matter what happens in the near term, and things could get pretty rocky, I see humanity starting a new chapter in its history where it learns the lesson of peace. It begins to allow these wonderful technologies out that gives us a sustainable civilization. And then the whole universe opens its arms to us. I think that right now the Earth is sort of in this adolescent phase of development, like a teenage boy that just got the keys to daddy's Corvette, and we're sort of reckless banging around out there. But as soon as we get to a little more maturity, I think the whole universe will open up to the possibility for our exploration and wonderment.
All right, well, then maybe if Task Force Commander Gorf's finger is getting near the button, maybe somebody else higher than him just stopped the hand and said, wait a minute, Gorf, no problem, Commander, they're destroying themselves, we just wait.
Well, actually, you know, it's interesting because that's not completely accurate either, because the fact that they neutralized intercontinental ballistic missiles, and I understand there were some situations where we came close to nuclear war back in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, where there were some pretty strange things that happened that saved us from doing something very stupid. So I think that they're concerned about this planet. I don't think they're going to do anything to just swoop in here and fix it for us. But at the same time, I think they're patient, and they have a certain amount of confidence that humans can be wise enough. We haven't acted too wisely in the last 100 years, but that we can be wise enough to straighten this mess out. And I really believe that. I deeply believe it.
You're an optimist.
Yes, I am.
Present trends, environmental and otherwise, minus the technology that you know they have, or you know we have, that
right.
We could be using, it seems like environmentally we're doomed.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that is that that's not an incorrect analysis unless something significant happens fairly soon. Our analysis is that these new energy and propulsion systems need to be in a manufacturing base by the first quarter of 2004. Now, that's less than 3 years away.
Sure is.
Now, what that means is that we have formed a corporation, and we are in the process of identifying some real energy and propulsion system devices, some assisted by people who have been on the inside of these projects, and we will try to move them forward. If we get hit with the Section 181 seizure, National Security Act seizure, we intend to defy it. I am saying here tonight that if we get hit with that, we will absolutely defy it and still go public. Now, I think that anyone listening to this is going, my God, is he serious? And I can tell you we are very serious, and we have collected some of the most brilliant scientists and technologists, and in fact, in the last 6 weeks, are moving forward very quickly with trying to put that together. It's a Promethean industrial undertaking, but it can be done. And by the way, I am confident we do not have to wait for some magic box to come out of the Pentagon, that there are people out there who understand these things, but they have never had a strategic vehicle for bringing it out to the public. That's what we have now created, and in fact, I have two network anchors ready to cover that story as soon as we have a legitimate device that has been tested and proven to be correct, and I think we're getting very close to beginning to identify one of those.
Doctor, if you were not heading the Project for Disclosure, and you were suddenly off-planet one way or the other, what would happen to it?
Well, we have a wonderful team of people that are in an executive position working with us who would carry this work forward, and I have confidence that it would continue. And we have wonderful scientists and military people, my military advisor and others who have been involved for years and who are trusted and would continue this work. And, of course, this is something I considered because, you know, as you know, I had metastatic malignant melanoma and was supposed to have been dead 3 years ago. So, you know, I kind of view myself living on borrowed time in a way. And so you make contingency plans. But right now I'm healthy and free of any problems. And my view of it is that, you know, hey, let's go. But we do have a backup system.
All right. Let's do it again. You've got two dates coming up where people in Southern California can benefit for $5 and they can go and see all you've got to offer. Los Angeles, Saturday, August 4th, 1 to 6, Founders Church of Religious Science at 3281 West 6th Street. That's $5, folks, 1 to 6. And then in San Diego, Sunday, August 5th, 1 to 6 again, 5 hours long. Campaign for Disclosure, Scottish Rite Center, 1895 Camino del Rio, South San Diego, $5 to get in. That's a lot for $5. That's what, $1 an hour?
Well, you know, I even apologize for that. The first ones we did in Boulder we had it for free because the facility was so inexpensive. Unfortunately, in San Francisco, we had to spend almost $5,000 just for the facility, and in Los Angeles, it's $2,000 or $3,000. So, you know, we're asking for this $5 donation just so that we don't, you know, completely hemorrhage totally all of our funds. We want to get the word out there, and we want to build support, but we're putting on this nominal charge just because the expenses in some of these West Coast cities are so high.
Doctor, I understand. We're out of time. All I can say is stay healthy, for God's sakes, and hang in there.
You too, and take care of your back.
Okay, my friend.
Take care.
Good night. Dr. Stephen Greer, folks. He's got his neck out 100 miles. So if you're in one of those cities, you might support him. Go by. See what you think of all this. It's definitely mind-blowing. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from August 1st, 2001. Presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired August 1st, 2001.
Coming up in a moment, Sylvia Brown. She's probably one of the most internationally famous psychics in the world right now. Stay right where you are. Coming up, Sylvia Brown.
Now we take you back to the night of August 1st, 2001. On Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Y'all know who Sylvia Brown is, I trust, don't you? She's all over the place now. I see her on pay-per-view now and all kinds of places. Well, we've been interviewing her for a long time. She began her professional career as a psychic on May 8, 1973, with a small meeting in her home. Within about a year, her practice had grown very, very large, and she decided to incorporate her business as the Nirvana Foundation for Psychic Research. Wanting to make her work as professional as possible, then as now, she maintains required business licenses as a member of the Better Business Bureau, donates a lot of time to charitable organizations, and is working with police. Her business has remained in the same general vicinity since she began it. Sylvia's family line includes several practicing psychics and mediums. Her maternal grandmother was an established and well-respected counselor and healer in Kansas City, Missouri. This psychic talent has also been passed on to her son, Christopher, as well as his daughter. There seems to be a genetic component, perhaps necessary, to create exceptional psychics. Her bloodline carries that predisposition to excellence. As Sylvia says, anyone can learn to play the piano, but not everyone is a concert pianist. Here's our concert pianist, Sylvia Ryan. Hi, Sylvia.
Hi, Art.
It's been a while.
Yes, it has. It's always good to be with you, Art.
And it's always good to have you. Sylvia, you believe that, then, that this is carried genetically through families?
Well, I guess I'm enough of a researcher, and I guess you want to call it scientific bent, that I do know that it all comes from God, but I do think that genetics helps. I mean, you know, I don't think we have a bit of trouble saying that, of course, you know, you're a concert pianist because your father was, or you're a great artist because your father or mother was. Mm. But when you start saying, well, I'm psychic because my grandmother and my great-grandmother and her mother, people start getting real freaky. But I do think that there's a definite component part that's trackable.
Well, you know, you see a lot of daughters and sons of movie stars, television stars, but mostly movies. And inevitably, they're into the movies, and they're quite good. And I often wonder if it really is the genetics, you know, or if it's just the fact that mom or dad has the ins, and, you know, there's that acting school,
yeah,
and, you know, all the rest of it.
It's probably part and parcel. You know, it's sort of like a Heinz 57 variety, that a little bit here, and environmental here, and the genetics here, and the predisposition of allowing it to be. Mix it all together, and, you know, it probably does come out as that.
I have a lot of really prophetic dreams. I have
you have for a long time.
A lot of dreams that come true.
Right.
Sylvia. Why is it that future prophecy, personal prophecy mostly, comes to us in our sleep, do you think?
Yeah.
Why do you think it does that?
Well, if you've ever noticed, anyone who has an analytical thinking mind, which you do have, by the way, you're always thinking. If you're not running ahead of yourself, analyzing what's been done,
yeah,
what's going
great.
To be done,
uh-huh.
When would you have time during the day?
I don't know. I analyze things to death, Sylvia.
I know you do. But when would you get a chance to have that opening, let's call it, for lack of a better word.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
You know, as at night, you wouldn't have it during the day. Your mind's too busy.
Huh. I guess that might be true. And then when you relax, I guess your subconscious just lets everything in, and away you go.
Well, I think it's the whole idea of alpha state. You know, I mean, whether you're in theta, delta, alpha, doesn't make any difference, at least. The powers that be say, you know, Art, mind's quiet now. Let's push it in. It's the only time it is quiet.
Sylvia, are you on a some kind of a microphone or something?
I'm on a headset.
A headset. Is there any chance you could pick up the phone?
Sure, I can.
All right, let's compare it right here on the air and see what we think.
How's that?
Let's see. Say something.
Is that better?
It is better.
Okay, good.
It is better. Yes. Okay, well, I guess a lot of people probably have these prophetic sort of dreams, and they don't pay any attention to them, wouldn't you think?
Absolutely, and you see, prophetic dreams, as you well know because you've had them, are very sequential. They're not gibberish. We all have these, what I call, you know, sort of maniacal, idiotic dumping dreams.
Oh, yeah. I have lots of those.
You know, that's a release dream.
No, I know.
The difference.
When I've had something that relates specifically to my life or someone or something around me, then I know it's kind of a prophetic dream, or at least I guess I've learned. No, let me rephrase that. I've learned over a period of time to recognize the difference. You bet.
Mm-hmm. You know why? Because Art, it comes sequentially. It's too realistic for it to be all jumbled up.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's not all jumbled up. It's very specific.
Yes.
Okay, well,
I think the more you go with that, you see, here we go again. It's the same thing as, you know, exercising your back or whatever. And the more you do it, the more you make the muscle stronger. You know, I think it's the same thing with, let's say, for lack of argument's sake or hypothetically, that the, like the ancient Buddhists believe, you have the third eye. Well, that's nothing more than pituitary gland. Let's say my family has an enlarged pituitary gland. The more you work it, it is a muscle, and the more it becomes, you know, really refined or defined.
So, tell me, have you ever had any tests, Sylvia?
Oh, yes.
Have you?
Oh, God, yes.
But I mean medical tests.
Yes, medical tests, and I can name you the doctors, which most people won't, but I will.
What kind of tests did you have?
I had a 3-hour MMPI. I had a light test, probing, prodding, psychological. I had it with Dr. Beal, Dr. Blattner, Dr. Rennick.
Wow. And did any of these physicians detect anything abnormal within you?
No. It came out that, and it was kind of funny, I can even send you that. Sylvia is very, very normal. Sylvia has her own I am intact. She doesn't need this alter ego thing. I mean, you know, I could, they said she could have been a stand-up comedian, she could have been a speaker. So in other words, I didn't have to rely on being psychic. And it came back that she's very normal. In fact, one doctor, Dr. Bill, said she's disgustingly normal, but she has this paranormal ability that we can't figure out what it is.
Other than genetics, to what do you attribute it?
God.
Huh. Then why would somebody who wouldn't attribute it to God, somebody who is perhaps even an atheist and yet is able to discern things and a prophecy and all the rest of it, they have the talents, but they don't attribute it to God.
I don't think they do, though. You know, I've been in this business. I'll be 65 in October. I've been practicing, I mean, literally, as we call a card-carrying psychic for 48 years. I have never seen anyone that good that didn't believe in God. I mean, they might have a short stint, but what worries me is when I see these people and they don't attribute it to being a vehicle for God, and I'm not being humble. I think we're all tubes by which energy comes through, and God's energy. I just don't think they have it then.
Huh. So you think that most proclaimed atheists or...
I don't think they could have it. Or if they did have it...
Oh, that's interesting.
It would be maybe a rare hit, or maybe they had built up, you know, like Jim Jones or whoever, Davidian, you know. I don't mean to be discriminatory, but I just don't think they would have it. You find them to go way off in left field somewhere, proclaiming it because they can't prophesy, so they begin to proclaim themselves to be some kind of an advanced messenger, which almost, let's say, shrouds the fact that they can't do prophecy. So, in other words, they have to become a cultist.
Does that mean their talent is not real or their ability is not real?
It's not real.
It's not real?
No.
And that brings up another topic. You know, I, like everybody else who watches late night television, I'm always up late. The psychic 900 lines now proliferate. Oh my gosh.
Leo and...
Oh, there are some pretty interesting advertisements on TV now for psychics.
Oh, sure.
Really interesting. As a group, but not specifically, how would you comment on this proliferation?
I think that reminds me of a neurologist standing on a street corner with a dirty knife. It just makes me crazy. Certainly we all have to get out there and have our radio shows or Beyond Montel or whatever to sell a belief. More than anything, I'm trying to sell spirituality to people and not to be afraid, more than the psychic. The psychic is sort of, I call it the, you know, sort of the flash, but the real hook is spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I've gotten, you know, our foundation is more or less a feed-through, and I'm very familiar with lawyers and police officers, and I do know that some of these, which will go unnamed, have been busted lately, especially with some of the ones that we've seen.
Busted lately?
Yes, very. It's on the internet. They were actually billing, having people being billed, or say they were billing, they were dead. I mean, they were actually, you know, using dead people's names.
Wow. Wow. So are any of these things, do you think, that you see legitimate? I mean,
No.
Then what are they doing? I mean, if they, you know, in the ads that you'll see on TV, they'll say, oh my God, your husband's cheating on you.
I know.
But you knew that. Well, yes, I did.
Yes.
That kind of thing.
Sure. I was asked, which I won't name the name of the company, the big company out of New York, to sponsor a 900 number. And I can tell you the truth. Art, I had a real strong talk with God that night because, I mean, the money is astronomical. And I said, I can't do that. For one thing, I'd have to answer every phone. How could I do that? And they said to me, you can write a script. I said, you can't. Now, see, that's a cold reading.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing they do.
Yeah.
I know. I've had 900.
You've gone from darkness into light. You know, you have a weeping spirit over your shoulder. I mean, come on, who doesn't? Or who can't?
Huh. So you turn them down. I did too. I had them approach me, and I said the same thing. There's no way. I don't have enough time. And then they gave me the script business. So I guess they hit everybody the same way.
Absolutely. And the money is astronomical. And it starts out huge weekly, and then it accelerates to 3 cents every call. And I mean, after you start adding up, it is just huge. And I said, you know, not to be altruistic and humble, I said, you know, I love Cyrano de Bergerac's, one of his last phrases that he said before he died, I want to go to God with my white plume intact. I mean, I don't want to go and stand before God and say that I took this. You know, I mean, you have to have money because you support so many people, but I mean, to just do this because you're reading off of a cold paper.
What about the biblical activists who would say to you, anybody who says she can know the future is a false prophet?
Well, see, I'm a Bible student, and I've read all 26 versions of the Bible, including Lamsa, Jerusalem, Aquarium, Douay, King James Version. And where they get this from is always Deuteronomy.
Uh-huh.
They will quote Deuteronomy. And in Deuteronomy, it says, do not consort with seers and sorcerers. Well, who in the hell is a seer and a sorcerer? I don't know any. Then what's amazing?
Well, a seer, though, might be described as a psychic.
Yeah, but then see, about a few paragraphs down, then you get Joseph, you are the interpreter of dreams. Come over here and interpret our dreams for us. What about in the book of Kings when Samuel and Saul, and they bring him back from the dead, and the witch of Endor goes into trance? And we don't want to look at that.
That's a good point. So how do you reconcile then? How do you reconcile that, or do you not? I mean, if the Bible sends then mixed messages on the subject.
Well, the Bible, God loved the Bible. I mean, I think it was for its own time. I'm much more a New Testament than an Old Testament. But you will find in the Bible, for instance, that, okay, all of a sudden God doesn't like the Ammonites and tells, you know, everybody to go over and kill the Ammonites. Well, logically, you have to say to yourself, who didn't God make the Ammonites? I mean, you know, it really gets to be crazy after a while. Or the one I love is when God asks Eve where Adam is. I mean, does that worry anybody? I mean, what do you mean? Does he know where Adam is?
Right.
He made Adam.
Right.
But you see, is the Bible holy? Is it a beautiful word? Of course it is, because it was trying to show man the analogy of the rebuttal of the Egyptian gods, you know, that we were the monotheistic group, and we had to have a god that was more ferocious than any other god. And I understand that. See, our Bible is not new. It was actually taken from the Babylonian text, almost verbatim. And if anybody, I say to people, don't accept my word for it, research, read. The Babylonian and the Sumerian texts have Jonah and the whale, Noah and the ark. You know, this is not a new story.
All right. Well, you are right up there at the very elite top of those who are thought to be psychics in the world right now. How did you get there? Why did you get there?
Well, I think it's like I told you, Art. I think probably you're only as good as your last reading. You know what I mean? You just keep on keeping on. I mean, you know, I think people have known me long enough and I've been around long enough to know that I'm not 100%, but my God, I better be pretty close to on the mark. Can I be mistaken? You bet I can. But I better be more right than wrong.
Are you?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think...
Any idea of what your percentage is?
I run... we try to do a stat because we do validations all the time. I run about between 86 to sometimes 90% correction.
Oh, that's very high. That's very high.
Well, to show you how... And someday I'm going to write a book about what people say to me. This man called me one day and he said... You told me I was going to change my job the 7th of June. He said, well, you were wrong. I changed it the 6th. Well, you know.
Sylvia, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour.
All right.
And we'll be right back. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Just roaring through the night time. Morning, everybody.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 1st, 2001. Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 1st, 2001.
Sylvia Brown is my guest. Do you wonder what it would be like to have a lot of psychic talent? I mean, more than just average, just almost burdened with psychic talent. That's Sylvia Brown, and she'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 1st, 2001.
Once again, Sylvia Brown. I'm Art Bell on Coast to Coast AM. Sylvia, welcome back.
Oh, it's good to be back.
Sylvia, do you, it's hard to put into words, do you receive this just in the normal process of thinking? I mean, we all have imaginations and we can let our minds wander and various things will occur to us. Does it occur to you in that manner?
Yeah, but it's almost instantaneous. And over the years, I've learned how to discern, you know, what is Sylvia's thoughts aside from what's going on with art.
You see what I'm saying? I see exactly what you're saying, yes.
I know how to differentiate. I've gone into the reading room or done lectures or been writing my books or whatever, and I can be having a temperature or what, and that seems to operate independently of me.
Independently of you. So in other words, it doesn't really matter your physical or emotional condition.
We have our own issues, as we all have. But that in itself, you know, my staff often says it, not to be, macabre, but if Sylvia dies, we could put her head on the desk and her mouth would move. You know what I mean?
Yes,
I do. You know, Sylvia can have her own issues about her life or personal life or family. But when I'm dealing with a client, that seems to be a part. I had one, a doctor tell me that he thought, in fact, this is Dr. Rennick, who now works for the Justice Department, said that he really was convinced, he's a psychiatrist, he believed that I was using the limbic brain, which is the older brain. He said, I'm convinced that that's the part of the brain that you're probably using that people used to use. Let's say that's what kept them from, or saving them, knowing that there was a saber-toothed tiger out there or whatever it was.
Sure.
He said, and probably you kept that limbic brain alive, or your family did, or there's some component part that kept the limbic brain alive.
But as I understand that aspect of the brain, it was a fight-or-flight kind of animal instinctual thing that, for example, you knew you were in danger.
Absolutely.
But I wonder how you make the jump from that.
Well, I think culturally and the way society moves, God only knows we need flight and fright now, although it's in a different way. It's whether it's economy or whether it has to do with panic anxiety attacks or illnesses or, you know, where you're going to move. It's not, well, it's different, but it's still that survival mechanism that's operating.
But how does it cross over to be able to receive information about others? And where do you think that information is actually coming? Sylvia, have you ever heard a remote viewer describe how they do what they do?
Absolutely, and we've done it.
So then, I'm not so sure there's a great difference between what you do and...
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right.
Really?
I think you're absolutely right on target.
Because they also have to differentiate, crush the personal ego, so that,
that
their own imaginations don't interfere.
Yes, that I know that you're sitting in a chair holding on, that I see your things around you, that, you know, the clock... I mean, I have to know that. You see what I'm saying? I don't know if that's any different. The only thing that I do is take it a step further. Because, look, all time, I'm convinced, goes in a circle. And all I do is just push the circle a little farther. Okay, now he's in the chair. Now he's reclining. Then he'll get up. Then he'll go to bed. You see what I mean? I have to keep going.
Time is a circle.
Yes.
A circle, that's an interesting concept. What do you mean by a circle? A circle implies that you're coming back to where you were, or could come back to where you were.
Well, I think we've always thought of time as linear.
Yes.
But I don't think that that's true. I mean, you know, we say things like history repeats itself, and, you know, what goes around comes around. We have all those wonderful sayings. But I found that life repeats its patterns.
We do have a lot of circle sayings, don't we?
Oh, sure we do.
You're right.
You know, and we keep doing the same dumb circles. We all do. But I have always thought that... I think God now is in circular form. And I think that's very hard for us to understand unless we step out of the circle. Then we can see it. But everything is circular, I think, for God. Everything is going on the same record at the same time.
Huh. Does that mean personally? Does that mean as a...
I think it's personally and universally and universally. Planetarily and...
It's all circles.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's fascinating. All right. Then, in effect, would you not be afraid to say that what you're doing is really, in effect, remote viewing?
Are
they interchangeable?
Absolutely. I think that... Yes, and I think it's remote viewing of your chart, even. See, would it matter if remote viewing were that you're at a fountain now and I'm on a hill, but I know that you're at the fountain? Or would I then take it further and say he's going to come down off the mountain and go into the chalet? It is a remote viewing.
Well, then, is all knowledge, Sylvia...
In the Akashic Records.
It is.
Everything that man does. Everything that man does is accessible because God already knows what man and woman is going to do. It's just our learning process that feeds data back. We're the experiencing part of God that is not only learning, let's say, our lessons, but I think we're feeding back the information for a God that is intellectual. Let's say, for lack of a better way to put it, we're the emotional side of God experiencing for God. You see, everything's in duplications and duality. We know we have a left and right brain. Let's say, hypothetically, God is left brain. We're right brain. So we're the emotional side of God feeding data back.
Why did you decide to do with your talent what you have done? I mean, you're all over the media. I see you even on pay-per-view. You're everywhere now. What made you take the career path you have taken?
Well, I think I'm 65, for one thing, and I think that after 48 years of research and constantly, I think it's like a scientist when you keep seeing something reproduced constantly, whether it's death and dying or like my new book, Past Lives, Future Healing, and you keep seeing that there's cures that are constantly being, or people are constantly being cured and helped by past life knowledge, I said to myself, I don't care how much flack I get. If this is going to help one person, 10 people, which has helped, I can't even tell you, why not put it out there?
So then your view is that truly then the circle applies here as well.
Oh, certainly.
We go round and round. We are reincarnated.
You know, when people say, and you know, you and I are not that much different. When people say, well, what do you think of your detractors? Well, who doesn't have a detractor?
That's right.
If you really believe it and it hurts people, I mean, it helps you whether it hurts them. Like I said, if I swear to God to you, Art, if you were helped by a purple spotted giraffe and I could get a hold of one, I'd bring it in. I don't care what it is as long as it helps you.
Is it possible, I mean, take my situation for example. As you know, I've been off with a bad back. Here I am back. My back continues to be bad. It's not well, and I don't want to fool people into thinking that. And the doctors say it's not going to get better. So I'm faced with an interesting situation here. I'm avoiding surgery like the plague. Until I can't walk, I'm not going to get surgery. I'm just not going to.
And I don't blame you for that. And I work with 350 actual MDs, and most of them, especially the orthopedic men, are the really good ones, are the first ones to say that's the last thing you want to do.
Yeah, well, it is the last thing I want to do. Anyway, is it possible to psychically heal?
Absolutely.
It is.
And it also, even if you don't believe it, to say when you go to bed at night, if there's anything that I'm carrying over from this life or a past life, and even if you don't believe in that, say, I wanted to be released in the white light of the Holy Spirit, or whatever your belief may be, Buddha, God, spirit consciousness, white light of love, I'm telling you the truth, it begins to, go away. I know what happened to you, whether you believe it or not. You were run over by a cart, and you were crippled in a past life. You got to a certain part in your life, and your cell memory said, uh-oh, well, he did it once. Let's fix him again. Now, I don't mean psychosomatically, because the cells have memory.
Well, then I don't see what can be done about that. In other words,
because if you speak to your cells and they release it, see, I never believed until I started doing this some 25 years ago that cells actually are sentient. If somebody would have said that to me, I would have said, yeah, you know, and ladybugs talk to you. I didn't realize that every cell in your body was sentient.
Well, I didn't either. I know that there is certainly a cellular memory. There's enough proof on the table.
Absolutely.
With regard to that. And somehow or another, organs that were in one person impart memories in another person.
Oh, and I can tell you about a woman who came out of surgery with a heart implant and wanted a beer and a cigarette and never in her life smoked or drank, and the man that she'd gotten the heart from did.
I know.
I mean, there's case after case, but...
I know. So then our cells must have...
Cell memory.
Well, is it cell memory, or are they part of the overall process? You know, I'm told, Sylvia, you can remove a half of a person's brain and they're still functional. There are people walking around like that. So could other parts of our body or our body as a whole have some sort of memory? I guess the answer is obviously yes.
Yeah, and you know that old corny expression that, as corny as it sounds, is so true. It's probably one of the greatest truisms, is mind over matter. Because, you see, we just use the mind, but the soul also has memory. Whether you want to call it the Ka, the Altman, the Oversoul, has the memory and the ability to rejuvenate itself. It really is the mind-soul or the soul-mind taking charge and saying, look, I might have had something happen to me in a past life. I'm certainly going to do physical therapy. I'm going to take some oil to help me lubricate, because you're honestly, you really need like an oil and lube job. You're stiff as a board.
That's what I need, an oil lube job. Oh, that's funny. So you're saying I got run over in a past life, huh?
You did, with a cart. I mean, you didn't die from it, but you were paralyzed. Now, let me tell you this, and this is not to make you feel good, but you're not going to be paralyzed with this. You're not going to be in a walker, wheelchair, whatever.
I was using a walker here in the house during the worst of this, a wheelie walker my wife got for me. It's the only way I could get around.
I know. And see, people don't realize, unless they've had their back go out, if you sneeze, if you cough, if you laugh, I mean, people do not realize what a part of the back, I mean, what it does to you. You need to, please don't make me laugh, don't make me cough, don't make me do anything.
I could go on and on. No turning over, no moving around, no quick moves.
No.
And even sometimes, if you don't do anything at all, and you're in the best position you've been able to find, it would still go.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Get that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. A past life, then.
Yes. And even, you see, I say to people, it doesn't matter if you don't believe it. I've had enough detractors who say, I say, okay, but what do you have to lose? Just try it. You know, I mean, if you try it, what have you lost? What, 3 minutes a night? You go to bed and you surround yourself with a white light and you say, look, what? Because God knows we take in enough negativity in a daytime. Mm. In one day, what about all the lives we build up?
That's true. We do. We take in a lot of negativity during
in one day.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of it, sure. Life is full of it. You know, it's full of challenges and negativity, and it's your challenge to get through it.
And you can be the happiest person in the world and walk around as a sponge and absorb it from somebody else, and you don't even know you've got it.
And past lives, or something about past lives, you're able to discern that about somebody in a reading?
Yeah, when I did the Showtime, the pay-per-view,
yes,
this man who was literally 12 years, and I have this phobic reaction of, please don't ever let me know who the person is. So the producer just picked somebody and sent him up to my apartment, and the guy sat down, and I said, you have this thing about breathing, and you have asthma, and you feel like you're choking, and you haven't gotten out of your house for 12 years, and nodding yes, 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 yes. And I said, I don't care if you believe me. I said, you were in the Civil War. You were in the French Revolutionary War. You weren't part of the bourgeoisie. They shipped you. They shoved you because of their fanaticism. They shoved you on a cart. They put you up on the scaffolding. You didn't get your head cut off, which probably would have been better, have been faster. They strung you up. They put a rope around your neck, and they let you dangle. They didn't even have a trap door. Well, his eyes got big as saucers, and I could, it's not that I could read minds, but he was like, this is a good story, and I think she's probably a nice lady, but so what? And I said, okay, you don't have to believe me, Ken. I said, but from this moment on, you will not be afraid to fly. You will be able to come to Vegas where I am. And I said, just put the white light around you. Well, damn if he didn't show up in Vegas. And he said to everybody, I'm cured. He said, I don't know what she did, but he said it just released it. So, now, detractors will say, this is a healing story for the mind. I heard them all. I know it isn't, but let's say hypothetically, for sake of argument, it is. Who the hell cares? If I give you a sugar pill and it cures you, are you going to call me up and scream at me? Although I know it's valid, because the soul knows if you're lying to it. It really knows. There's a truth alarm that goes off.
Well, that's really interesting. So this information about another's past life comes to you, I would think, as easily as...
As the future. Because, see, they're circular.
Right. Got that. That's fascinating. And it really is so close to remote viewing if you just change
Absolutely
the names. I mean, they say the same thing, that present conditions travel into the past, travel into the future,
sure,
is all
you know,
equally
a lot
possible.
Of that was Stanley Krippner. You know, he did a lot of that
remote
viewing many years ago.
So...
He was way ahead of his time, and everybody said, oh, poo.
What about Edgar Cayce? What was he doing? Same thing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You notice how he always said, we have the body here. We have the person. How in the world could they have the person miles and miles away unless, let's say, they were, in concert, remote viewing?
So, then I guess you're right. This, whatever this is, it's not new. It's very old.
Oh, it's ancient. Look at the oracles. I mean, it goes back far beyond any religion. You know, they say that, you know, prostitution or motherhood or whatever is
the oldest profession. Yeah.
But let me tell you something. Prophecy has been around forever, whether you want to go back to the ancient Sumerians, whether they did the astrology, doesn't matter. Or the ancient Babylonians, it's always been there.
Huh. All right, Sylvia, hold on. We'll get right back to you. It's the top of the hour. Take a good deep breath. So, from a lynching to asthma. You believe all this? Well, I do, because I know that it's true. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from August 1st, 2001.
I hear the drums echoing tonight. She hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. She's coming in 12:30 flight. Moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words or ancient melodies. He turned to me as if to say, hurry boy, it's waiting there for you. God knows soul, and it's taking you so long to find out you're wrong.
listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from August 1st, 2001.
Good morning, everybody. Sylvia Brown is here, and she'll be right back one more hour ahead.
Now we take you back to the night of August 1st, 2001 on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Once again, Sylvia Brown, the internationally renowned Sylvia Brown. Sylvia, welcome back.
Thank you.
Sylvia, I think that remote viewers talk about the possibility, and in very hushed tones too, the possibility of remote, what's called remote influencing. I'm sure you know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to influence perhaps another mind on the other side of the world somewhere, or wherever it might be, it wouldn't matter, in space, on the moon, wherever, another human mind, to actually influence it in some way. Do your psychic abilities approach anything that begins to skirt in that area?
Never.
Mm-hmm. Never.
No, because you see, I believe that all of us are, before we ever came in, have a chart that was, that we, let's say, contractually made with God, and that chart is going to be lived out whether we like it or not. And the idea of trying to influence, I think the Russians really had that, they thought they had that down pat.
Oh yes, they did, indeed.
You know, the mind reading, the mind manipulation. I think that even if I could do it, which I can't, I wouldn't. I mean, I think you'd be interfering then with the whole charted learning process for God. I think then you start playing God. Then I think you almost then get into that occultism thing. You know, in other words, I'm going to manipulate your mind.
Yes, yes. One could imagine you believe remote healing to be possible. Now, you described several things already where you told people, for example, about a past life in which something has occurred that's affecting their present life. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I can certainly buy that. What about the jump from that psychological effect you might have on somebody by helping them to understand what happened to them, but jumping to actual remote healing? In other words, psychically healing,
yeah,
at a distance,
well,
directly,
yes,
healing.
Absolutely, and I think energy is energy. And I know that a great deal of my ministers do an awful lot of this work. In other words, energy is energy. And they're, what to say, and we've seen this, I mean, what is prayer but energy sent out?
Yes.
Is that we will sit around in, you know, in our groups and say, you know, Martha, whatever, is having problems. Okay, let's all focus on her and send her, as you would like to say, which I think is a marvelous way of putting it, remote healing, and send that energy. And you'd be surprised at how many people, even at my lectures, when I say, let's all concentrate.
Oh, no, I wouldn't be surprised at all, Sylvia.
You know, and say, you know, like, let's think about ourselves as golden poppet beads strung together, and push your energy to the right of the person. Well, eventually that energy goes around the room and then hits you. You know, I mean, energy is energy, and it can be sent out. It's almost like, doesn't God know where the energy is supposed to go? Of course God does. So let's send it.
I've seen it work. I know it works, Sylvia. No question about that. Would you agree that many minds focusing, I don't know, a healing energy?
Oh.
On somebody in the form of prayer or whatever we want
Absolutely.
To call it, that is an increased or a bigger effect or power.
Oh, sure, because you see what you're doing is you're lending your energy to that person's energy, and you're upping that person's energy. And in doing that, whether it heats the body, who knows, who cares what it does. But I've seen it. Prayer is the miracle by which that energy is transmitted and elevate, and the person doesn't even have to know it's happening.
That really has been proven, hasn't
it? Oh, absolutely it has.
They've done a lot of double-blind tests, I know.
Absolutely they have.
And the people who were prayed for recovered much faster.
Well, you know, we're even getting doctors now. You know, it used to be, and there's almost, I couldn't believe it. I was in Pennsylvania, and even in the airport, there was a chapel. You know, more and more people in churches, there's, I mean, in hospitals, there's chapels, there's
yes.
prayer groups. We never used to see that years ago. So people are beginning to realize, hey, we might not know what it is, and it doesn't matter if they don't know what it is, they just know it works.
Then it might be said then, if that's really true, that while mankind is doing a lot of things that are considered awfully negative,
there's an awful lot of positive things.
An awful lot of positive things occurring too. Chapels and hospitals.
Absolutely.
People realizing the power of prayer, that sort
yes.
of thing.
And see, you know, you asked me a question earlier. Why at this point of your life, I guess more than anything, I wanted to show people that all that we've talked about is possible. Also that there is another side. Also that God is all love, all goodness, all caring, all perfection. See, I never have understood logically, let's not even go on faith. Logically, how do we all say God is omnipotent, perfect, all-loving, all-knowing, and yet God's mean, hateful, nasty? See, something logically begins to break down there. I mean, we've either got to have one or the other.
Well, one of the ways that it breaks down is when a father sees his young daughter get hit and killed by a car,
right.
or something of that magnitude. It's almost impossible to understand how that man would feel. If he were a godly person, he might be awfully tempted to say, God, where were you?
Exactly.
And how could a God, an all-caring God, let this happen?
Absolutely. And even with as much as I know, when I had 9 people die in 3 months, I want to tell you something. I had some really ferocious talks with God. Even knowing everything that I know, there's that human factor that says, okay, I wanted rain, but I sure as hell didn't want a flood either. What the hell's going on up there? But then you readjust yourself and realize that this is such a trend. If I could just make people realize that this is just a bad camping trip, you know, that this is just a very, very temporary visiting place, and that we all end up at home. And we make so much to-do about this place. You know, not that I don't believe that you shouldn't live in a nice house or drive a nice car or have a good back and all those other things that we want to have. But it still is a tough place to be. It's a rough neighborhood here. And if it weren't a rough neighborhood, like I say to so many people, I expected it to be so much more perfect. I said, well, then you shouldn't have come here, because this is where hell is.
This is where hell is.
Yes.
I surely do agree with that. I mean, you know, it's just got to get better, because you wouldn't think it could get worse.
Exactly. And you know this thing about a pit and somebody in a red suit and a horn. You know, I've said in my lectures, I wish to God they did have a red suit. At least we'd pick them out and we wouldn't marry them or have them as family. I mean, at least we'd know who they are.
Yes.
No, they can live next door to you. You can marry them. You can have them in your family. You can run into them. I mean, we don't have to worry about demons and devils. We have enough mean, nasty, hateful people running around.
We do indeed. Is it your view that there is a traditional heaven and hell, or do you think, as you just sort of suggested, that we're already there? We have only up to, we can only go up from here.
Oh, absolutely. And I think Milton had it right, too, when he said, within every man there is heaven and hell. I think it's, here we go with circles within circles. I think that that's part of it. Man does create his own heaven and hell here, but nevertheless, even at that, it's a bad camping trip, like I said. But the only place to go, as you just so rightly said, is up from here. This is as bad as it gets.
So we are the absolute bottom rung on the ladder.
Absolutely. But I think there's a reason for that, because if there wasn't negativity...
Oh, no, I think that's a very hopeful thing. I mean,
yeah.
We're here, what can we do about it?
How would we know how to bounce off of that? You know, I mean, there has to be a negative side for us to say, but for the grace of God, there go I.
And maybe in the next life, there you go.
Yes.
How many lives do you suppose we lead? Is it endless, or is there some sort of graduation?
That's right. No. You know, it's strange. In the last 10 years, somebody mentioned to me the other day that in the last maybe 10, 12 years, I have seen more people. Maybe it's because they're coming to me more. I don't know. But I've seen more people on their last lives than I did when I was much younger. I think people are coming to the end of things. They're just tired and worn out and say, look, I just want to graduate and go home. I think that hole that we walk around with, that sense of longing, is nothing more than a homesickness. We've never been able to identify it. It's a place where no Porsche fills up, no mansion fills up, no diamond fills up. It's just that man yearns to go back to his original home.
And that is?
That is the other side. That's the other side. We're with our loved ones, our animals, our friends. You know, it's like, hey, I have to go down the chute, and I have to go through this really rough school, and then I'll be back. And when I come back, I will have learned a lot, and I will have accelerated my soul in learning for God.
What can you tell me, if anything, Sylvia, about the nature of the other side?
Well, you know, it's 3 feet up off the ground. Now, why is it 3 feet up off the ground? I don't have a clue, but I do know that it goes at a higher vibration. Now, that's not just my one day I got up and decided I was going to say this. I mean, this was from years and years of doing, listening to people that were Islamic or Muslim, rather, Presbyterian, Episcopalian, Buddhist, and everyone, whether they were in death and dying mode, whether they were in regressive therapy mode, whether they were in astral projection mode or in dream mode, everyone began to see the same and report to me the same topography. The Hall of Wisdom, the Hall of Records, where we go, where we check in, the work that we do, the research that we do, the animal husbandry, the gardening. It's a beautiful place. See, it's just exactly like, and I think Plato said it better than anyone. He said, we're nothing more than the shadows on the wall of the cave. We're the world. We are the world of antimatter. That's the world of true matter.
Huh. And it's 3 feet above mm-hmm. the ground.
Now, what's interesting, if you've ever heard anybody talk about ghosts, they've always said, why do they seem to be floating? Well, they're not. They're walking on their own ground level, for God's sake. It's 3 feet up off the ground.
Oh, what a good point. Others, theoretical physicists, really brilliant minds, have described other dimensions, which yes. is another way of saying another vibratory level. You said vibration, right? So
absolutely. Vibration that goes, my spirit guide says that you, she said you're at a very, very dense, thick, fog-like, density. She said we go at a much lighter vibrational. And, you know, and it really threw me for a loop as a young girl in Kansas City, Missouri, when she said, you know, we're just as real as you are. And I thought, now, you know, that sounds crazy because, I mean, you feel your skin, you know you're here. She mm-hmm. said, no, you're very, very, in fact, she actually said, you're ghosts in our world, which I thought.
You're ghosts in our world.
She said, you are ghosts in our world. And as I get older, I'm going to tell you something, Art. The way the molecular structure is going, I can see how we're loosely hung.
But that's intriguing. In other words, if we see these apparitions from time to time,
right.
whatever they are, then why wouldn't the reverse be true perhaps as well? Or the likelihood is that it would be.
Right. Right. And, you know, because they see, like people have always saying to me, I hope my daughter, my son, knows that I love him. I said, And like you so aptly put it, a man who loses his child in an accident, I didn't get a chance to say goodbye here that all the time. I said, then say it now. They're all around us. They populate us. They they move within our dimension. We just can't see them all the time because they go at a higher vibration. But they're certainly all around us.
All right. Here's one for you. Earlier in the program, you told me, Art, you had a past vehicle car accident. You were run over. You were crippled. But you're not going to be crippled now. Now,
right.
Suppose it had not been that you saw at all, or that what you saw was that I did have an accident, and indeed, in this life, I am going to be crippled. When you get information like that, that would be devastating to anybody, what do you do with it? Do you, without comment, pass it on to the person you've read, or what do you do with it?
Well, you see, because I do care about you, I want to give you that. I don't usually volunteer that, but if you were to ask me, Sylvia, just right up front, Sylvia, what about my back?
Right.
And I saw you in a wheelchair, I would say, okay, this is what's going to happen, Art, but this is what you're going to do with it. Then I'd look further, and maybe you'd write, maybe you would mm-hmm. show someone else what to do. You see, there's always escape hatch for this.
So in other words, you try and provide the person who's getting the bad word with the upside of their situation.
Absolutely. But
you don't hold it back.
Oh, never. No.
Well, I mean, if you look at life in general, Sylvia, lots of good things happen, as you've noted, and lots of bad things happen,
sure.
too. And so your delivery of information is going to be kind of an even good and bad scenario for the average person, right?
Yeah, it's just like, let me give you an example. At a lecture in Cleveland, a woman came up to the microphone and she said to me, Sylvia, I want to know how long I'm going to live.
Uh-huh.
And everybody in the audience went, and I said, 6 years. Well, the woman danced back to her seat. She knew that I knew that she knew. It sounds like, you know, who's on third? that the doctors had only given her maybe 7 months. The audience felt bad, but I wasn't about to ethically or morally say, this woman is so happy because I've given her an extension that she never thought she had.
Hmm. Do you get that question often?
Yes, I do.
Do you always answer it?
Always.
I mean, occasionally you must run into the person who's going to have a heart attack next Sunday.
Yeah, not that. Yes, I have, but not that often. And I also believe that a psychic is supposed to be. See, we've always looked at psychic, and I'm beginning to hate that word to tell you the truth. But as the ace of spades or whatever the hell they use falls and you don't have any control over it, I do believe, whether it's Sophie Glutz or Sylvia Browner, wasn't I supposed to be written into your life to tell Kent Herkenrath, which I did, do not, under any circumstances, take that plane out of Chicago in April. And he said, I walked around the airport cursing you, and the airplane crashed. I think also psychics, true psychics, are supposed to be protectorates.
But isn't that very close to what you were talking about earlier when you go over the line and begin to play God?
No, because I think I was written into your chart. See, like I said, whether I was...
So you were supposed to be there at that time.
Absolutely. Whether I was, like I said, Sophie Glutz or Bill Smith.
Which means he was not... it was not his card that came up at all, really.
Right. Now, could he have had free will choice and said, the hell with her, I'm going to get on the plane? Of course he could have. And he was furious that he thought he was superstitious that he didn't do it. But he said, and I never will forget on my answering machine, was just these few words, Sylvia, thank you for my life. And that was all he said, and that was enough for me.
Oh, my. All right. Sylvia, hold it right there. We're at the bottom of the hour. How about you? If Sylvia or somebody like her told you, don't get on that plane, it's going to crash, as she just described occurred, what would you do? Honestly, you'd walk around the airport. You'd see the next plane was hours and hours, if not a day away. What would you do? Would you get on that plane?
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 1st, 2001.
His heart in every line. Marvin sang of joy and pain. He opened up our mind, and I still can hear him say,
covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again, or to fly to the sun without burning a wing, to lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. That all these things in our memories are, and they use them to count.
Premier Radio Networks presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired August 1st, 2001.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. Sylvia Brown is here, internationally famous, certainly, as one of the top psychics, a word she's not too fond of, I understand that, in the world. It's an ability, it's a talent, it's inherited, it's all of that and a lot more, but it's real. She's one of the real ones, folks. And with a lot of the real ones, I've heard the same complaint. We'll ask whether she's had this problem or not in a moment. Stay right where you are.
Now we take you back to the night of August 1st, 2001, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Once again, Sylvia Brown. Sylvia, a very, very good friend of mine, who had something happen to him and then acquired a very great deal of psychic ability. Following, or in the beginning of this psychic ability, found that he couldn't take it. He couldn't sit in rooms of people. He couldn't go into crowded places because the din of information that was flowing to him from all the minds around him was
unbearable.
Absolutely unbearable. Have you gone through that?
Yes, when I was 19. But my grandmother, who had died a year before that, said, you will get to that point. But she said, you'll eventually know how to turn down the light, because I can empathize with this person totally, because I'd know who had an ulcer, who was getting divorced, who was going to die.
I mean,
it just got to be horrifying, you know, and you almost become agoraphobic at that point.
Exactly. In other words, anybody's life is full of enough hell on earth as it is without
getting bombarded by it.
Right. So what in the world do you do?
I don't know how to explain it to you, but I never can turn it off totally, but I turn it down. I turn the light down, and then when somebody asks me the question, it seems like the light comes on then.
Huh.
I think it's a trained response. It's like You just learn how to deal with it.
That must be exactly right, that you just learn how to deal with it.
Because if you didn't, I think you would be out collecting tinfoil and string.
Well, you've come such a long way, and now you... when did you make the decision to become public? I mean, I'm sure there are people who may have your ability who are extremely, extremely private about it, but instead you went into the media.
Yeah, and that was a big choice to make. I mean, it's one thing to be known, I guess, if you want to call it sort of crazy to your, you know, your college friends, your people that I used to teach, because I taught school for 18 years and all, you know, and I used to do readings for the AAUW and all that.
Really? What did you teach?
I taught Catholic school for 18 years.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Mm-hmm. And I used to do readings for all the nuns and priests, which is a book in itself, but and that's another story. But I decided everybody knew that I was, and it was to hang that shingle out. I am not ashamed to tell you, it took a great deal of courage because, you know, I've always said I'm probably the most unlikely person to have the gift because I'm very practical, down to earth. I love my family. I love to cook and sew and do all those things that, you know. So I never was airy fairy. I never wore a pyramid hat and burned sage. Not that I mind that, by the way. But yeah, and I just decided no, that I think that not only do I want to show people that I'm psychic, my biggest message was the spiritual message that comes out in all my books is that this is really like you and I have discussed, that this really is the trial. This is really the Golgotha, you know, of the world.
Yes.
And once you get through that, your Gethsemane, then you get to go, you graduate, and you go to the other side.
And stay. How much do we really know, again, about the nature of the other side, when you finally get to go and stay, or is that information scarce and hard to get?
No, it's not. That's why I began to write the book. That's why I wrote the newest book, The Past Life and Future Healings, was because of all the people that I began to do regressions on and also readings began to be cured. And I said, hey, there's, you know, and then, you know, like I said, it's a scientist who keeps, I'm sure that Salk, when he kept doing it and said, my God, this is something that's going to cure polio, eventually you start saying to yourself, why should you keep this secret? Why shouldn't you let people know? Regardless of the criticism of the detractors, who cares? If people are healed by this, who cares?
Yeah, that's right. Who cares?
Yeah.
There are some out there, as you well know, you will never convert, if that's even the right word.
Oh, and you know, Art, who, and that's fine, because, you know, wouldn't it be scary if everybody believed in everything that one person said? I think that would be horrifying. I think everyone, whether they're Christian, Buddhist, Shinto, follow their own way. And I think I'm very ecumenical. All I say to people is, if you're going to do it, be a good one. You know, do it right. Because I don't think God is going to stand at a gate and say, now, wait a minute, Art, were you Presbyterian or Methodist? If you're Methodist, you can't come in. I mean, how stupid is that?
Is there time, as we understand time, that elapses between lives?
Yeah, people are always concerned, and I know that that's a human thing, is that when I get over there, will I see my dad, my mother, Yeah, the 99.9% of the chance that you will, because people don't incarnate that fast. And even if they did, hypothetically, to you, they would be gone, honestly, like a day and a half. See, there's no time over there. So you come from a time place, this time warp that we're in, to a place that's timeless. So, you know, I always liken it to the few times that I've been in Vegas. There's no time there. I mean, you don't know if it's day or night.
They don't put up clocks in Las Vegas.
No.
For a good reason. That brings up another question. people will say, detractors and even supporters alike, I suppose, why not use the talent you have to come to that little city over the hill here and take a shot at a casino or two, and why you wouldn't need to be on pay-per-view on Showtime or anything else, right?
To support all my people. Well, see, because I'm learning the same way as everybody else. I mean, anybody who's read my biography, I've fallen in the same dumb traps, the same stupid marriage the first time, and it takes two to tango. I don't want to just blame the other person. But no, it, I always liken it to, can a surgeon operate on themselves? No, they can't. I said to people, look, if I could win the lotto, I would have done it.
You would have won.
Yeah, but it's never been for me. I'm so blind when it comes to me. In fact, the closer you get to me, the more I love you, the less effective I am.
Well, that's interesting.
Because I'm now emotionally involved, you see what I'm saying?
So the best you could do would be perhaps to help a stranger get rich.
Probably. Well, I never will forget the time that I did, in one of the few times I helped this woman win $75,000, and it was really a fluke, because it just all of a sudden numbers came up for me, and I said, okay, for whatever this means, it must mean something. And I gave her the numbers, and she sent me in the mail a $5 bill. Now, this was the irony of it. I would so much rather she had sent me a thank you. I didn't want any money.
Wait a minute. She won $70,000, and then sent you a fiver?
$5 bill, which I would have so much preferred she just said thank you very much.
Well, I'm not sure that's wholly equitable anyway. I mean, you tip somebody who deals you cards more than Las Vegas. Anyway, that issue aside, you did do that then.
Oh yeah, but that was only once. You know, people say, could you give me lotto numbers? I said, I wish I could, then we'd split it. You know, I mean, whatever it would be. But, you know, this, you know, you see in these tabloids once in a while, I'll leaf through them in the, because you can't believe half of what they say anyway. Meg, you know, Madam whatever will give you numbers.
Well, yes.
And then why doesn't Madam Zorro do it? You know, no, I've never known. Truly, it doesn't mean that I'm poverty-stricken, but I've never known a true psychic that was ever that wealthy. We're just not. We just don't know how to do it.
That is one of the things that probably has the detractors jumping up and down, because they think psychics ought to be wealthy. So what they don't understand, then, is that a psychic cannot do for oneself.
That's right. They can't. No, because if that were the case, then what would we be down here learning? We learn just, like I say to people, when I lecture, I said, look, I may be talking to you, but when I leave here, I'm walking the same way you are.
Huh.
I may be facing you tonight, but when I leave here, I'm walking the same way. I fall in the same potholes and everything else.
Well, if you're, Sylvia, about to get on an airplane that's going to crash, do you think that because you are a psychic, that you'd just stroll right on and sit down in the hot seat and be plummeting 30,000 feet an hour later?
Maybe not, because I really have been blessed with the same, not the psyche, but the same intuition that other people have had. I mean, I haven't gone on certain trips because I knew they were dangerous. I canceled, 4 years ago, a trip to Egypt. It was very strange. And at that point, I don't know if you remember, but 65 tourists were killed.
Oh, I was over there at about the same time,
yeah.
So I remember it exceptionally well. So.
Absolutely. Now, since then, I have gone 3 times because I knew it was safe. But that one time, I simply called a touring company and said, we are not going. I have a really bad feeling about this.
You know what, Sylvia? I've had, after the flight of 800 that blew up, literally a week later, I was taking off from the same airport in the same route,
right.
And I did it white knuckle big time. I've flown all over the world, and I, to be honest with you, I've had forebodings about a lot of my trips that I have ignored.
Right.
I just counted up to, you know, stupid background noise and nerves and ignored it. So I wonder how you'd know, how you'd discern.
I don't know. It's a different feeling. It's almost a, I don't know what it is. It's called like a silent alarm. I know the difference between anxieties that I might be having to that sort of dead, calm, hollow...
Knowing.
Yes, knowing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I don't see you, by the way, ever crashing and burning anywhere.
Well, that's good to hear, and I'll remember that for sure on my next airplane flight.
Now, let me ask you this, and this is certainly not to validate myself, but as we've been talking, because I have talked about remote viewing, I have sent you massive amount of energy in your back. Please, if nothing else, you don't have to write me, call me, validate, but see in a few days if you don't, because see, I have so many ministers and study groups listening tonight, and they'll know what I'm saying, that they're going to send you energy.
Well, I'm sitting here on a pack of ice.
Yeah.
That's actually, I my whole back is numb. It's so cold. That's the only thing I found that that really seems to help, is freezing my back.
And I also want you to think about something when you go to bed tonight. I want you to think about all the people and all the things you've been carrying on your back for the last 5 years. You know, that's a real cell memory, too.
Yeah, my cells remember a lot. It's been an interesting few years, to be sure.
I know it has been.
So, think about all that, huh? Ruminate on it?
Yeah, and say, I don't choose to carry all this on my back anymore. Because you did come in with this tremendous humanitarian rescue theme that you have. And that sounds very altruistic, but it's a bitch of a theme, because I have one of your themes. I'm not the rescuer, but I'm the humanitarian. Huh. And boy, did we load up.
So are you going to keep doing this? You said yourself you're 65 now.
Right.
Are you going to continue to do what you're doing?
Absolutely. I come from a family that my dad used to say, my wonderful Jewish father used to say, that, you know, we don't die easily. Somebody has to come and hit us over the head.
Mm-hmm.
I come from both sides of the family, longevity. My grandmother worked as a working psychic till she was 88, so I don't ever intend to retire. I think retirement sounds just disgusting.
It is. It's also boring.
Well, not only that, but in the middle of the word is the word tire.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, it's tiresome, so I'm not surprised.
Not only that, but if you look at statistically, if a person retires, I mean, and they don't have something to do, I mean, like a wonderful hobby or something, they usually die within 5 years. It's amazing how you can almost chart that.
Well, what is it? It is true, of course, that that does occur. I mean, all kinds of things occur. Mates die within years of their men dying, absolutely. People die within years of retirement. That's certainly true. All of that is true.
You take the passion away from a human being, and there's nothing left. See, if we lose our passion, and that doesn't mean we always have to be, but the passion of what our belief system is, or the passion of getting something across, or a message, or a mission, or I don't care if you're a ferocious underwater basket weaver. I don't care what it is if you're ferocious about it. If we lose our passion, we lose our life.
So onward you will go.
Yes, I will.
That's wonderful. So you will continue to appear on television and do specials and...
Yes.
What do you like doing the most? I mean, you write books. I haven't even plugged your books. Jeez, let me just plug your books. let's see, you've got all kinds of books. Past Lives, Future Healing. That's
the new one.
That's the new one, right?
Yes. Nature of Good and Evil, too, is I've heard so many marvelous things about that one.
The Nature of Good and Evil.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any real evil, capital E?
Oh, yeah, in people.
In people, but not external?
No, there's nobody, like I said, running around with a legion of horns. I mean, you know, that was... Honestly, not to offend anybody, but my God, that certainly built big cathedrals, scaring the hell out of everybody.
But Sylvia, if there's a God, a real God, then like, I mean, everything else in the world that we know has a counterbalance, a yin and a yang, a positive and a negative.
Just, that rather than just Lucifer and his band of happy or miserable men, why can't we say that in the free will choice of when we were created, which of course we always were, but we have to say that because, you know, you can say you always were, but it's hard to say we always, I mean, we always will be, but it's hard to say we always were. But in the very beginning, let's say, and that's sort of an oxymoron, but in the very beginning, there were people who, in free will choice on the other side, decided that they would separate from the light.
Or put another way, we are the horny ones.
Exactly. Exactly. Sometimes more ways than one.
Yeah, I know. But the devil is within us, and God is indeed a real entity.
Absolutely, God's a real entity. And a loving, omnipotent entity that has is full of forgiveness and love. And that's what our Lord tried to teach. See, that's what's so sad about that.
So how did we get such a misimpression that if there's a God, then there's the devil too?
Because it made for business.
Because we want to blame it on somebody else, maybe.
Sure, and it made for big business, and it was ignorance in many ways. We can't explain. It's like the ancient Indian cultures, you know, they didn't know what caused illness. So they said it was a demon that God, that's what made people bleed people. It was the bad humors. It was the ignorance of the time that said, well, it's got to be something outside force. And then, of course, came along the devil with a horn.
Sure. All right, Sylvia. What a sweetheart you are to come on my first night back.
And take care of yourself, Art, because the world needs you, too.
And the world definitely needs you. Sylvia, thank you.
All right, and God bless, honey.
Good night.
Good night.
This kind of fits in, I think. Listen to the words. I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from August 1st, 2001.
Sword and pistol by my side. Many a young maid lost her baubles to my trade. Many a soldier shed his lifeblood on my blade. The bastards hung me in the spring of 25.
You just don't realize what you do to me when you hold me in your arms so tight. You let me know everything's alright. Hooked on a feeling, I'm high on believing that you're in love with me. As candy, its taste is on my mind. Girl, you got me thirsty for another cup of wine. Got a blunt from you, girl, but I don't mean a cure. I just stay up and can.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 1st, 2001.
Good morning. All the good from the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM. Let's do some open lines, shall we? Anything you want to talk about is fair game. I've got just a few things for you in a moment, and then this hour we'll do open lines. Tonight will be a four-hour program as I test my back's ability to hang in there. So, we'll begin repeating the first hour after the next hour, if that makes any sense at all to you.
listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 1st, 2001.
All right, here's the skinny on my back, folks. It's really in pretty bad condition. My back had me bent over and unable to move, basically, for weeks. And now I would say, walking 90%, 80 or 90% straight. I'm still bent over. Don't get me wrong. I'm still bent over and cannot straighten up all the way. I have a hard time sitting for long periods of time. I had an MRI, as you know, which was an interesting experience, by the way. And the results of that, both by my doctor and another doctor now, are that they say it is not going to get better. That's the advice I've been rendered to date, that it is not going to get better. And, you know, it might get a little better given some time, but basically it's not one of those things that's going to fix itself, which is too bad. And the options that I've been served up to date include surgery and or prednisone shots. Prednisone is a very, very strong drug that remains with you even after it has its limited effect. And those options don't interest me, so I'm rolling the dice like usual. And I'm going to just hope to get better. And toward that end, I am putting ice packs on my back, the small of my back. You can actually slip them in your shorts and freeze your back to death, and that helps a little bit. It's the only thing I found out quickly that heat does not help. I would sit in the shower, and I have one of those shower massage things, and let the hot water beat on my back, and I quickly found out that was a really, really, really bad idea, because whatever swelling is increased, and that's really bad, really, really bad. And so I had some of my worst days when I was in that mode. Then I decided ice was the way to go. And it's been kind of slowly getting better since then. So I'm rolling the dice, and I'm not going to let them cut me, and I'm not going to let them inject me, and I'm going to just see what happens. Because I don't want to go that route. When I was younger, I had surgery on my back, on my shoulder blade, and they took this was when I was 20 years old, a long time ago, and they took a benign tumor out, and you are never the same after surgery. You will always know you have been operated on, even if it works out at its very best. The odds with back surgery are really crummy, really lousy. And so, once again, I'm choosing to try to just hang in there, and that's what's going on. Now, on my website tonight, just put up a little while ago, I sent Keith a photograph, what I thought was a really interesting photograph. It's a photograph from Iowa. Somebody sent it in from Iowa, and it is an angel in the sky. And if this is not an angel, this is the closest thing. This is an angel. Now, in this modern day of digital photography, of course, we have no way of knowing if this is an authentic picture or not. But if it is authentic, then the odds, it seems to me, of this, I suppose, given all the cloud formations in all of the world and all across this country, occasionally you're going to get one that looks really like something. But this looks so much like an angel that it just, I mean, there's even a halo. I mean, we're talking serious angel here. So if you want to see it, it's on my website now at artbell.com. It's an angel from Iowa. Well, more accurately, in the airspace above Iowa, actually. So that's up there tonight. There's more of a reason to go to my website. Also, somebody sent me this photograph of a water park in Tokyo. And whenever you think you've got it bad, you might want to go take a look at this picture. Let me read you the caption to the picture. It says, "This is the Tokyo Water Park," where their slogan reads, "Welcome to the breathtaking Tokyo Water Park, where you can wash away the pressure and stress of the overcrowded city and relax with your friends in the soothing enjoyment of sun, fun, and splashing." If you are trying to decrease some stress in your life, this is not a place that Americans would go. It looks like it's taken, obviously, from an upper level or even up in the air. It's hard to say. But I'm telling you, folks, they look like ants down there. And, oh, when you look at this photograph, you've got to wonder about the water. You've got to really wonder about the water. The water is ostensibly, from this distance, blue. However, there are so many people and so many kids in this water park pool that to get in there and not wonder. Anyway, you take a look and see if this would relieve your stress. So, gotta see it. It's under What's New. It's called Relax in Tokyo Water Park. And, of course, I did get a photograph up there of this Bushnell telescope that I dearly love. This thing is incredible. They're a new sponsor. And so I put a picture of mine up. And I really caught a kind of a cute picture. I don't know if you've seen it yet. But I got Yeti, our newest addition, you know, our newest cat, looking up at the Bushnell telescope, kind of like he was staring into the sky or something. It was really a fortuitous photograph. And that's up there. So all of that's up there on the website right now at artbell.com. Looking around the world to see what's going on. Oh, yeah, one more thing. I was mentioning to you that these ice packs are the only thing that works. And just in case there's anybody else out there with a really bad back the way I have it, try this. You know, everybody has a back cure for you. I've received millions of them in the email and elsewise. Thank you all very much. But if you do have back trouble, consider what I'm doing. My wife obtained for me these lunch pack ice packs, and all they are is, you know, a plastic bottle filled with water, and you put them in your freezer and you freeze them, and then you can take them, and they're just the right size. You can put them in the small of your back and kind of move them around and freeze your back. And I'm not saying that's good for everybody, it's just what's working for me. But I do have a on the webcam tonight, I just took a photograph of the little ice pack that I use. I've got rotating ice packs, actually, so I can never be without one. Finish with one, put it in the freezer, get ready for the next one. Now, around the world, House approves Arctic drilling. The House voted late Wednesday to allow oil and gas drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in Alaska, rejecting claims the development would devastate a cathedral of nature in need of protection. Well, that may well be, but we definitely need the gas and we need the oil. And while I'm a pretty staunch environmentalist, I'm sure you know, I do think that we need alternative sources of oil and gas until we can get off the dime, which we damn well better do. If I were in Congress, I would be lobbying. I'd say, sure, go ahead and drill because we need it. And our economy is based on that. Any fool out there who doesn't think that can only look back to the last gas shortage we had in the 70s. It's obvious, right? We have to have it. But we had better start putting ourselves in a position where we don't have to have it, or pretty soon it's going to be all over. And it'll be all over when we run out of it, or when it gets so short and so expensive that we can't buy it anymore, and then our economy will go in the tubes promptly. 102 killed in Colombia fighting. Colombia troops and rebels this week killed 87 guerrillas and 15 soldiers. So they're having some pretty serious battles in the Colombian mountains, not a place I'd guess you'd want to visit right now. Code Red. The virus-like Code Red worm apparently infected computers around the world Wednesday on time, although the outbreak was not as severe as predicted. About 150,000 internet-connected computers were infected by Code Red, according to the SANS Institute, S-A-N-S, a computer security think tank working with the government. So if you've noticed the internet slowing down a little bit, there you've got it. Code Red did, as predicted, break out on Wednesday once again and is causing havoc. And then there's another virus going, a worm going around out there. I don't know if you've had the message yet. My God, I've had hundreds of them. It will say something like, I send this to you for your advice. And it could have any one of a million different titles, and it usually has an attachment with it. Don't open the attachment. If you see something that says something like that, I send this to you for your advice, I don't care what the hell it is, don't open it. If you do, you're going to get a worm. Microsoft Outlook based, basically, but you don't want it, believe me, and it's all over the internet. I bet I get 30 or 40 of them in each email download that I do. All right, to the phones. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Cheerio. Hello?
Hello.
Yes, hello. Turn your radio off.
I don't believe it. I'm on the air.
I know you don't, but turn it off anyway.
This is great. Okay, I've got to turn the TV down, too.
That, too, yes.
Okay.
All things down. Yes, it is. Where are you calling from, sir?
I'm calling from California.
Okay.
Yeah. This is about your back.
Mm.
And I have some advice for you.
Everybody does. But well, go ahead.
That's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, although if I did it all by now, I wouldn't be walking at all.
No. If you don't think it's good, then hey.
I'm listening.
Okay. The lady that was just on, Sylvia.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
The reason I'm calling is the thing she said about the past life thing.
Yes.
Okay, it's real simple. All you have to do is have her take you back to the beginning of the incident.
I wonder what kind of car hit me.
Well, okay. See, I got you. That's good.
Probably a Geo Metro.
You need to want to know.
Probably a Geo Metro.
Okay, well.
I went right over my middle.
You need to want to know. That's very important.
Okay.
Because if what she is saying is true.
Maybe it was a mighty Dodge.
Okay, listen.
I'm listening. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. If what she is saying is true,
mm-hmm.
The way for you to get rid of it is to go back and relive it.
Relive it?
You have to go back. See, physically you cannot go back in time. But spiritually...
No, but I could go lay down on the road and let my wife thump over me in the jail.
Spiritually, you can return to the moment.
Spiritually.
Yeah. Past lives, your spirit. Go back and look.
All right, sir.
Have her regress you. She talks about regression, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Well, she's already, in a way, thank you. She already put that in my mind. Now I know I was hit by a car. Hit by a car. Man, I bet that hurt. I wonder what kind of car it was. Was I tossed into the air like a rag doll? Or was I thumped right over? Well, I'll think about it, see if it helps. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
How's it going?
Well, hey.
You doing all right?
Life is life, right?
Life is life.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Where are you, sir?
I'm in San Diego.
Okay.
And I used to live in Taos, New Mexico. And my condolences to you about your back and everything.
Oh, thank you.
Hope you feel better. The reason I was calling is I just wanted to lay it out. I had some really great information when I lived in Taos, New Mexico, about how to tell the difference between the government spacecrafts that they've made and real spacecrafts.
Now, that would be valuable information indeed.
Would you like to hear about that?
Absolutely would, yes.
Okay. Now, the way to tell, according to my buddy, and he kind of put it out to me, is, you know, the government spacecrafts are the ones that you can always see as the lights, you know, and they make patterns and they do different things, and they're the ones that most people perceive as the crazy lights and all that. He says, and what I saw, and I didn't believe him until I saw it myself, is that the real spaceships and the real aliens appear to us in this matrix as clouds. And I said, okay, whatever.
Oh, come on.
I know. I said, okay, whatever. And one day I went back to his house, and we were there, and he said, look, there it is. And there was this big, you know, spaceship-like cloud. And I said, okay, whatever, you know, no big deal. But then I watched over the next 2 hours as this giant spaceship-shaped cloud opened up in the back, and there was a lever in the back, and I swear to you, Art,
a lever on
it was like a opening in the back, like a hatch, and I watched over the next 3 hours as these little circular, you know, disc-like pieces of cloud came out, and it was so slow, and if you weren't paying attention, never noticed.
All right, fine. So 3 hours you watched this, right?
3 hours.
So why didn't you grab a camera?
Because I was out in the middle of the desert, New Mexico, and if you've ever been out to the Mesa, New Mexico, outside of Taos, you know that no one has cameras, no one has TVs. People are absolutely outside of any kind of, you know, technological, you know, holdings, you know. They really are just trying to get to the roots of existence.
Now, I've got a photograph on my website tonight that just went up an hour ago,
uh-huh.
of an angel in the clouds. You know, I mean, I'll be doggone if this is not an angel. It is right down to almost the last detail, obviously an angel. Well, if you can have angels, you can have spaceships.
Definitely. Now, I hear that. Now, this is the crazy part. Now, I mean, I was watching for a while, and I still was doubting everything, but I watched as all these little spaceship clouds came out, right? And it was all vibrating over the Sangre de Cristo Mountains there.
Yes.
And this was the craziest part, Art. I know it's going to sound nuts, but...
That's all right. Lay it on me. I'm used to it.
We heard so clearly that there is no good or evil, that all our religions have been holding us hostage to these concepts of good and evil, and that nothing exists but this moment.
Now, where did this come from?
Now, this was just like just an energy in the air. It was like voices so clearly heard. And I asked him what he heard, and he told me. I didn't even spit it out. He told me everything that I had heard, and we both reiterated the same thing.
So you both heard this?
Yep, that there is no good or evil, that there is only this moment, and good and evil is a way to keep us fighting ourselves. And while we fight ourselves, they're going to sell us mindless consumerism. And that was what we heard clear as day. And that,
yeah, you know, that sounds like an anti-capitalist message.
Well, it's not even that. It's not even that.
An anti-capitalist cloud message.
No, it was just, you know, and since then, I've been living on that, and I watch every night as Peter Jennings, Tom Brokaw sells us lies of good and evil, Walt Disney, you know, sells us lies of good and evil, and it's everywhere, I mean, from the moment we're out here. And that message came so clear to me, and since then, I've been living in such peace that, you know, every day I thank those cloud aliens for bringing me that truth, that there really is no good or evil, and that's the way we fight ourselves, is by separating the existence into two separate parts.
All right.
Existence is whole.
I think I've got it.
You're perfect and free in your entirety, Art.
All right. Thanks.
Have a good one.
Yep, take care. Cloud aliens along with a cloud message that sounded suspiciously anti-capitalistic to me. Well, Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Cheerio.
Oh, hi, Art. Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome. Extinguish your radio for us.
I will indeed.
And your TV and your CD player and whatever else you've got.
All right. I'd like to talk about the Disclosure book.
All right.
I think Stephen Greer kind of underplayed that, and not only got, you know, the flying saucer stuff, but in the last couple chapters, of course, there's the one big chapter on top secret testimony of government insiders, and then there's the, you know, the free technology chapter and all that.
Yes.
But it's really worth, I think, the price of the book just for the small, short, hard copy of Monsignor Balducci's statement from the Vatican.
Oh, yes.
Because, boy, I mean, it...
I know. We've got an echo here. Hello, hello, hello. An echo. Anyway, you're absolutely right. Balducci's statement was incredible, wasn't it?
It just talks about a very theologically confident. It says they're not devils, they're not angels. You know, I mean, we human beings are probably the worst creations there can be anyway. They're probably closer to God than we are, so we should probably take them seriously. And
again, no devils, no angels.
Right. There's even something in there in the book about For You, Art, too. I noticed in page 402 on the testimony of A.H. talks about Operation Looking Glass, which talks about alien technology that the government has that can look into the future and go back in time and see what's going to be happening. So. It's something to think about. I know you're interested in that.
There's a lot to think about, sir. I've got to run. We're at the bottom of the hour.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, bye.
Goodbye, 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 goodbye. Every now and then we get an echo. I don't know where that comes from. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 1st, 2001.
it's still worth it. I'm a bus, I'm a tourist, cigar. And you've thrown away your choice and lost your ticket, so you have to stay on. But the drumbeat strains of the night remain, and the rhythm of the newborn day. You know, sometime you're bound.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from August 1st, 2001.
Morning, everybody. Some people are saying on Fast Blast that they thought Sylvia said I was hit by a cart. C-A-R-T, not a car. Maybe. But if you're hit by a cart, doesn't that mean you were first trampled by a horse? Either way, huh? Either way. Okay. We'll get right back to all this. Open lines, anything you want to talk about, directly ahead.
Now we take you back to the night of August 1st, 2001, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
By the way, anybody out there notice we got rid of the, I got rid of the garbage cans. The heck with them. We'll crash in and crash out instead. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, sir. How you doing today?
I'm doing, sir.
Yes, by the way, my prayers go out to the bad bag. Having one before, I know that I can feel your pain.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Actually, I'm the gentleman I've called you a couple times before. I'm the one that was seeking clarity, and ironically, it was through talk shows like this and things like this. Today I attended my first city council meeting here in Hillsborough in Tampa, Florida.
Did you get any clarity there?
Well, sir, I did, because actually what's ironic is that we have a public access station down here called Tampa Bay Community Network, and I'm one of those people, as you can tell, I tend to call, and I called one of these shows, and next thing I know, I'm putting on my own show down here, but yet I also find myself, the more I talk about it, the more I look at stories and every day in the newspapers and things like that, it really makes you want to get involved in your local government, makes you want to get involved just what's going on, because you really, and then just shows like yourself, sir, like the Drilling and Anwar. In fact, today I was actually in an office where I was starting to work on a campaign regarding offshore drilling.
Boy, if you can stay in this for a number of years and not get cynical, then my vote goes for you for sure.
Well, what's ironic, sir, is when I tell my friends about this and talk to other folks about it, it's amazing how desensitized we are as a society, because it's literally like every day we get a new story that replaces the next story, and it seems like we've almost
got a
cry wolf theory where we almost feel like we can't do it. But yet last year's election, and calling from Florida, as you know, one person can make the difference, and I appreciate the time, sir, and have a good night.
Yeah, all right, you too. Usually when people get involved in local government, they start out, as they do really at all levels of government, wanting to do a lot of good. But they start running into the reality of politics, whether it's local or national. There's not a hell of a lot of difference, frankly. And to be in politics, it is my opinion that you have to compromise your personal principles. And I don't know how you avoid that. And the higher you go in office, the more personal principles you've got to compromise. I've thought about this for a long time. And so people who begin to brush up against that with the best intentions usually come away pretty cynical. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. So good to hear your voice again.
Thank you.
Pray for a speedy recovery for you.
Thank you.
Two items. I'm hoping someone else could call in to expound further upon what I'm about to say. But there was an item in the news here in New Haven area, New Haven, Connecticut. By the way, my name is Reggie. I'm calling from West Haven, Connecticut.
Okay, Reggie.
And the item was, this little boy was having an MRI, and someone walked into the...
With an oxygen bottle.
Exactly.
I know, and it took off into the air, went into the machine, and crushed his skull, and he died.
Yes.
Yeah, I know all about it.
Tragic. But I was surprised to hear you had a repeat of a doctor that was on, and you questioned him about the magnetic energy or field.
Yes.
And he said he didn't know about it. And the reports that I heard here...
Yes, I recall. I recall. Well, let me tell you, I just had an MRI, as mm-hmm. I think you're aware.
Mm-hmm.
And I intentionally closed my eyes and almost went into a... even despite the noise of the MRI machine, I almost went into a meditative state because I wanted to really see if I could see an effect. And I did.
Mm-hmm.
I surely did. I closed my eyes and clouds began to form.
Mm-hmm.
Light clouds, very light, bright clouds, and they would quickly move out of my apparent field of vision, and another one would form and move out of my field of vision.
Mm-hmm.
And so the electromagnets in that thing were obviously having an effect on my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only effect I felt. No ghosties, no goblins, nothing like that.
Right.
But I surely did see that, no question about it.
Right. And the other item I wanted to touch on was listening to your guest tonight. I was wondering why, and it probably would be inappropriate, but I was wondering why the Chandra Levy case wasn't brought up.
I'm going to ask Ed Dames about Chandra Levy on Friday.
Oh, good.
All right.
Yeah.
We've had him working on Chandra Levy, so you'll get your answer then.
Okay. Thank you so much, Art.
Thank you, hon. Take care. I kind of kept it general. I probably should have asked her about Chandra Levy, actually. At any rate, Ed Dames is going to have an answer for us, and we shall see. Another thing, I thought Ed Dames had just about a hit on Amelia Earhart, if that story turns out to be true, because it was just about as he said, or so close to the area, it's not even funny. And what apparently was spotted, the wreckage that was spotted from satellite, whether it, if it does turn into the real thing, will be awfully close to what Ed said. Virtually not hidden, not deep down in the ocean, but very shallow. West of the Rockies, you are now on the air. Hello there.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing okay, sir. Where are you?
San Diego.
All right.
Yeah, first I want to say hello to Dean. I heard Dean on tonight. Me and Dean, man, we go way back with Mike Siegel, you know?
Hey, Dean.
I think Dean should be married by now. I think he was going to get married in May. So if he did, congratulations.
Hmm.
And basically what I wanted to say is, I say this politely, but everything Sylvia Brown, is that who she was, Sylvia
yes,
Brown?
Yes, she was Sylvia Brown, yes.
Everything she said basically was demonic to the core, you know? I mean...
Well, I understand that real religious conservatives would absolutely believe that, demonic to the core.
Well, it's not religious conservatives, it's what Scripture says.
That's a religious conservative, sir. Somebody who abides literally by the Scripture would pick out parts of it that would support that. Now, I think she did bring up one pretty good point, and that is that there's Scripture, and there's Scripture, and there is some Scripture that seems to support people who were seers.
Well, prophets, yeah, but all the world of, like, divination...
Yeah, but at one point it says anybody who would tell you the future is a false prophet, but at another point in the Bible it seems to support prophecy by humans. So how do you reconcile that?
Well, God does give prophets, but the use of, like, trying to see the future through means of divination, whether past, present, or future, that is strictly condemned. That's divination. That's quasim in Hebrew, and nehash, neaz, enan, and that's in the Old Testament Hebrew, and
mm-hmm.
Mantiomena and pneumapython.
No, I understand. There are many, many, many people who feel as you do.
It's divination, and that's condemned, but being prophet, that's a special gift from God, and a true prophet would never claim that they are a prophet for the sake of humility, you know?
Well, how do you know there couldn't be egotistical prophets?
Well, then they're false prophets. True prophets.
Edgar Cayce was a false prophet?
He was.
Was he?
Yeah. True prophets say thus.
Are there any modern day claimed prophets or people in the modern day that you would say are true prophets?
There are holy elders in Greece that are clairvoyant elders that are Christian monastics. But they're not equivalent to, say, the Old Testament prophets.
Nobody's name that you could rattle off that we would know, though.
Living today?
Yeah.
You wouldn't know him.
Okay, well, I appreciate the call, and you may well be right. Who knows? You may be correct. Who knows? On the other hand, there are people like Sylvia Brown and others that I know personally that absolutely have that talent, have that ability. Now, I suppose you can say that they're sourced evilly, if you wish, and believe that if you wish. But I don't think you can argue that their ability is not valid. I've seen it too many times, and I'm not easy to convince, and I never believed in this sort of thing, but I've seen it personally up close, and so that I know that it's real. Now, is it demonically sourced? I don't know. If you believe in the devil. East of the Rockies, you're on the air, top of the morning. Hello? Going once, going twice, gone. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Hello?
Yeah, is this Art?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up something with your back.
Yes?
I had to go to a class not too long ago on lifting.
Oh, yes. Lift with the legs.
And a couple of instructors both had back problems.
Well, what kind of confidence does that give you?
Well, one had surgery, the other went to another therapy I thought you might want to think about.
Okay, go ahead.
He had something with mixed with chiropractor,
yes,
and therapy all in one.
Let me tell you what my experience with chiropractors is, and it's very limited. But I've been to the chiropractor a few times. A lot of people suggest that. And they make me feel better for a little while. I get off the table and I'm going, wow, man, that's great. But it lasts a couple hours, few hours, and then it's back to where it was. Now, that may not be the case. I mean, everybody's an individual. Nobody's condition is the same. And that makes advice very difficult. But that's been my experience with chiropractors. I've tried it and tried it, and it works for me for a little while, and then the same old thing comes back again. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hello, is it Star?
Yes, turn off your radio.
I just did.
Thank you.
I know everybody's been calling about your back.
Yes.
I'm a board certified hypnotherapist,
mm-hmm,
and I have done many past life regressions.
Yes.
And I suggest...
Did she say I was hit by a cart or a car?
Cart.
A cart. Well, that like I said then, that probably means I was trampled by a horse first.
But not necessarily.
No?
But I suggest that you work with Sylvia if...
Might have been a golf cart.
Are you interested in what I'm saying?
Yes.
All right.
You said you should work with Sylvia?
If she worked with you, yes. Because the purpose of a past life regression and going back to the initiating cause is not the incident in itself, but the emotions that may be related to it.
I understand.
And I suggest you work with her. Because she also has healing potential, and that's also very important.
Well, as I understood it, if I heard her say it properly, the healing is the psychological aspect of having you come to terms with what happened to you in a prior life, right?
In many, many cases, yes. But also in many cases, there's sometimes a residue that needs to be finished off with some healing.
You mean...
At least that's been my experience.
You mean as in personal or hands-on type healing?
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't know that she does that. We didn't get into that aspect of it, really.
Well, I wish I could... I mean, I could help you long distance.
Well,
I've done quite a number of long-distance healings successfully.
Well, anything you think you can do, I would appreciate.
Okay, what number would I call during the day?
Oh, well, I can't give that out.
I know you're not.
You could call, I tell you what you could do. You could call my network at area code 541-664-8829.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
How's that?
That's fine.
All right, leave your name and number.
Fine, I'll do that.
Okay, thank you. And, thank you all. It's just that everybody, you know, has a method, a little thing. Anybody you talk to about a back problem has a relative or themselves, and they've all had back problems, and they're all kind of distinct. And no single cure works for everybody. So it's just one of those things. A cart, huh? A cart. Now, I don't know. I can feel there's probably a hoof print back there somewhere. That's what I think I can feel. Big old U-shape. Print. Wild card line, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. It's Keith from Hamilton.
Hi, Keith.
How you doing? I wanted to give you my backstory, if I could, very quickly.
All right. This is the last night we're doing backstories, folks.
Okay, that's no problem. I used to always talk to you about my constant everyday bad luck, and I have a bad luck backstory.
Oh, bad luck, bad. Well, they're all bad luck.
Yes. When I was 18, I worked at a supermarket, and I had to clean up the tops of the shelves of overstock.
Yes.
And there was a grating up there, and my shoelace got tangled in the grating. I completely tripped and was about to fall backwards. Now, as I did, here's the second part to it. You know those carts to pull, like, you know, stock to the aisles and stuff.
Oh, yes.
I landed on that first.
Aye.
It tipped over. I landed on my back the second time. To this day, I have two slip discs, and I still feel the pain.
Yep.
It does not go away, Art.
Yeah, I know. That's what the doctors told me. It will not go away. It won't get better by itself, they said.
I wish you luck with your back, Art.
Well, we march forward in time. We'll see what happens.
Yes.
I'll call Sylvia. Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Hello. Turn your radio off, please.
Hello?
Turn your radio off.
It is off.
All right. Where are you?
I'm in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin.
Okay. Proceed.
What?
Proceed.
All right.
Speak. Now, you're turning your radio on again, sir. Turn it off, please.
All right.
I don't have to leave
the line. All right.
All right. Go ahead.
I'm just wondering about, you know, the global warming.
Yes.
Thing you had on, like, a month ago, just before you went on vacation.
Yes.
I just think it's a really bad idea to have people, you know, like the scientists that think they can probably move the Earth.
You mean NASA's idea to move the Earth farther away from the sun?
Yes.
Yeah, that didn't strike me as Plan A, or what ought to be Plan A, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you say that they thought they were going to do it? Try bringing asteroids or comets by the Earth to move?
Well, the way they were going to do it is, they said that an asteroid, which would be diverted from some orbit it's in now, a big one now, a real big one, I mean, bigger than the one that even killed the dinosaurs, would be diverted so that it would pass, literally skipping almost through the Earth's atmosphere. It would pass so close that it would throw the Earth out of its present orbit and begin to move us out into space, farther away from the sun. Now, I don't think you have to be a NASA rocket scientist to decide this might not be a good idea, that several things could go wrong. For example, the big rock could hit us by mistake, come into the atmosphere, just a little error in their movement of that rock, and we'd be toast. And then, of course, others might imagine that we would be successful, but the Earth would go spinning further out than the scientists thought. I mean, after all, they do occasionally get things wrong. You've all heard the stories. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.